Years ago, I was watching a compilation of best video game trailers, and all the best ones were for games I've never played and don't have any interest in, and I was disappointed about that. Fast forward just a bit, and we finally reached the part of the timeline where game universes and other forms of media are getting good. While I'm not a MOBA player, I am still delighted to see that Dota 2 is getting its own animated series this year. This is my favorite headline of the night. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to bring you detail on this and the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Voice. Orange Lounge Radio is back once again, live with episode number 857 for this February the 21st of 2021. My name is Rob Roberts, and I'm joined virtually via the magic of Discord with my co-hosts. Say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers. Hi, how are you? Your internet is a little bit choppy, I think, because you're cutting out a little bit, but that's all right. We'll just hope. It's like having a Zoom call during work. Are you there? Are you on mute? Are you okay?
My God. I don't even know what's going on because it was affecting work yesterday. And my speeds and everything are great. Uh-huh. So I think that it's just time to replace this dinosaur.
Well, the good news is the complaining is coming through loud and clear, so I think we have you back. So
all I need to do is bitch about everything then, for fuck's sake.
When life gives you lemons, ask to speak to life's manager. All right. Anyway, we were doing a little show and tell before the show tonight, and I thought maybe you'd want to show some of our Twitch listeners, Twitch viewers, of course, because we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, that's VOG Network, at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. But don't worry, for the podcast folks, I'm not just going to make you sit there in silence. If you subscribe to us on a popular platform like Spotify or iTunes or whatever, Google Podcasts, whatever it is you used to listen to us. I know you can't see, but I'll talk you through it here. So Dark Sakura has some things. So like, you know, as if this vault, which is more of a metaphorical vault at this point, it's not an actual vault anymore. But we have some new things, right? So Dark Sakura, talk us through some of these things you've added to your collection, and where did you get this from?
Well, and right now I guess my office here is like my nerd cave officially. So back in the day, of course, you know, my husband used to work at a GameStop and Game Crazy, that was the Hollywood video one, and we would acquire some of their advertisement products. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'll hold up the first one. It is a ginormous PS2 box for Parappa the Rapper 2.
I love the giant oversized game boxes. I don't know what it is about them. I like just like fake giant oversized product in general. I guess it reminds me of Supermarket Sweep. When they have to grab the large inflatable thing. I don't know. Anyway, what else you got?
So that was you ready for number two?
Yes, I am. Oh, what a cool. It's a blow up of Busta. It's Busta Groove, right?
Yeah, it's the U.S. one, of course, because right, I don't know that. Did they do these in Japan? I don't know. But at any rate, you know, like I was going to pass that shit up.
Oh, yeah, that's a keeper right there. I love that one. So it's a giant oversized of that. And then here we go. Maximo.
Yeah, and like Maximo, it was kind of the maybe a spiritual successor to Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Which those games are back in the news this week. We'll get into that in just a little bit. We have a very busy intro to our show tonight. I love that. Now, give us so that's a Final Fantasy X box for those listening on the podcast. And I love that they have the front and the back, so somebody could pick that up and pick the giant box up and read the back. Now you have to give us your best Titus laugh.
Just no.
Jamie's like, I don't have to do anything. Perfect. Or should I say, all right, forget it. Kingdom Hearts. Is that one or two? It's Kingdom Hearts 1, right?
Kingdom Farts.
Love it.
Yep.
That's awesome. That game was like brand new the very first week we did OLR. I remember that. There were some people that were playing through that for the first time. So
you ready for the last one?
All right. Yes, I am. Because we got to introduce, oh, yes, Final Fantasy VII, the original on PlayStation, complete with
this
the back
is
of the box as well.
Probably my most munched one, but this is, I think, one of the first ones we ever acquired. And these are going nowhere except on my wall.
No, I was going to say, if we are ever able to get back together in person again, hopefully the vaccine won't take
These
that
are not
long.
Going on your wall. These no, are no, going on my wall.
It doesn't have to be on my wall, but we can maybe borrow them for a photo shoot or something.
Yeah, I would do that. Yeah. You know, Rob, I would gladly lend these to whatever new studio happens to come into the future.
I think the last actual photo shoot we did with the three of us was like, it was like 10 years ago. Like I look great with all my hair, but it was a long time ago.
Well, so we probably my hair was when I was dyeing it myself.
Oh yeah.
And there was a little bit more of me at the time.
Yeah. So we've all changed a little bit.
So.
All right. Well, let's also say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Who's also changed in 10 years because now he's, I don't know, maybe I need to stop calling him Techmaster Loki and call him Game Developer Loki.
It doesn't have the same ring to it, but okay.
I guess, it's true. It doesn't have the same ring to it. I guess you're stuck with the old name. So how are sales of Pixel Poops going? Through the roof?
No.
All right. Well, you know, just make sure you get out there and promote and do all that good stuff, you know, because it's going to be hard after the first week. You know,
it is what it is.
All right. Well, we hope most of our listeners have checked that out by now over on itch.io or Steam, Pixel Poops number 2. And on Steam, you have to look up the main Pixel Poops game. But I would also recommend that to all of our listeners here at Orange Lounge Radio. But we've talked at length about that. So my question to this for you this week is, what now? Like, obviously, we'll get into your gaming week a little later in the show, so we'll talk about what you've played. But, like, what's going through your mind now about what you want to do next? Or are you focused now on, oh, I got to go back and I got to upgrade Pixel Poops 2 for that physical release that everybody's asking about now?
So I've been working on, like, a few things. Just, like, I purchase a few more boards to come in. So I have 7 more coming in. So I have like a total of 12 cartridges now. Because just the supply is not, there's not a lot of supply out there for that stuff. So I got what I could with that. I have been looking at what I'm going to do next. I wasn't really sure. There's an NES game jam that's in March. They may do, I don't know. But yeah, I have lots of ideas of things I could work on. I may do another NES game. I have an idea for one, so I may do that.
All right. Going to our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, Zen Monkey, regarding your name, is suggesting Game Master Loki. I don't know. That might be too much for the ego, Zen Monkey. I like the name. It does have a much better ring to it, Game Master Loki. But I imagine like Loki probably would get his butt whooped at most video games by a lot of people out there on the internet.
Yeah. That's probably true.
We're in our 40s now. Like... I don't know if we're going to call ourselves the Game Master, but I appreciate the thought, and I do agree it has a better ring to it. All right.
I am the Game Mistress.
The Game Mistress. See, I kind of like that in a way, but I think when I think Game Mistress, it's got to be more like Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. That's the Jamie vibe I get. So, you know, yours truly. Hi. Yes, our Zoom meeting is still connected.
Yeah, I'm just like whatever about it right now, so...
I understand. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit. You know what? Since we are joking about age and things like that, and for the folks watching on Twitch tonight, we had a little a parody at the beginning that was poking fun at age a little bit. But, you know, this is the reality is that today, one of the all-time greatest franchises is turning 35 years old. So today, February the 21st of 1986, is when the Famicom version of The Legend of Zelda released on the Famicom, which was actually the disc system at the time. And you can play that original Japanese version of the game if you are a Nintendo Switch Pro person, because you can actually download, you just make a Japanese account on your Switch, which doesn't cost you any money to do, and you just use that to get into the eShop and download the Famicom player, and then you can log into the Famicom player in your U.S. account that actually pays for the service, and I imagine this works, you know, U.K. and other regions as well, and then you can actually play the original, so you get that little extra sound chip that the Famicom disc system had that didn't translate over to the Nintendo.
Really extra as much as different because the cartridges were the ones that could get the extra chip.
True, but it did seem like games, there were a handful, like that one, Metroid, Castlevania, you know, that sacrificed a little something as opposed to trying to, you know, because they couldn't really bring it over one for one.
One of the big things, though, is that actually Castlevania 3, when it came out, it had that extra chip that gave it another, I think, a layer of sound.
Oh, right, because it wasn't a disc game, of course. Right, right.
Exactly. And it also had extra animations and, like, a different attack for Grant. There mm-hmm. were a few things.
Yeah. But anyway, not when this isn't about Castlevania. Yeah. It's about Zelda. So I'm kind of...
It could be.
We love all the games. But I'm kind of curious, you know, because I know for me, this series has been hugely impactful. And I guess maybe I'll start first and talk a little bit about my memories of Zelda, because, you know, playing the very first original Legend of Zelda game, obviously we got it a little bit later, but that was really the first game that I remember really wanting a Nintendo for. Like, I liked playing Super Mario Brothers in the arcade, and I liked playing things like Ice Climbers and stuff like that too. And I remember playing some things at friends' houses. Like, my friend even had the Rob the Robot, and we tried to play, I think it was Stack'em, even though we didn't understand what the hell we were doing. But and Hogan's Alley, I remember that one too, because that was a game I really liked in the arcade. But I remember that when I saw, like, The Legend of Zelda, that was the moment, and, you know, I would have been like 8 or 9 years old when I saw it, where I was like, oh, I've got to have this. Like, this game is amazing, and I want to play this. I want this in my house. Mommy, can I have an NES? Okay, we'll get straight A's. And I did. I got straight A's. So, you know, I got a Nintendo, and that was pretty much the first game we bought. Outside of course, it comes with, most of them came with Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt and all that. But Zelda was like the first game we bought. And then I became so obsessed with that game, like not just playing through the first quest, but playing through the second quest, that even though I got picked on a lot in school when I was growing up, because, you know, I was, you know, a little different, the bullies would then want to talk to me more one-on-one to ask me things like, so where is, like, level 7 in the second quest of Legend of Zelda? Because I can't find it. So it was a very interesting kind of, like, dynamic that played out there. But that was really the game that led to me becoming, like, the, and I'm using my quotey fingers, video game expert when I was younger. You know, the one in the class who knew everything about the games and read all the magazines and all that stuff. So, yeah, that, and, you know, obviously from there, I still love Zelda 2. I got that the Christmas or holiday when that first came out, and I played the crap out of that. I wasn't bothered by the changes. It was just a little different to me, but I really enjoyed the game. Of course, I loved A Link to the Past on Super Nintendo and on and on. I did lose the series a little bit because in college I fell out of gaming a little bit, and so I didn't transition to Nintendo 64. When I did finally go to a new console, I went to PlayStation because that's where Final Fantasy was at. And that's like the big series. So I kind of fell out of Zelda at that point, which I know because Ocarina of Time is like the Zelda game for many, many people. But I had a different trajectory. I kind of fell out at that point. And, you know, obviously I've rediscovered a lot of the love through more recent releases like Twilight Princess and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, it's just an all time great series, but especially that original game has a real special place in my heart. So I'm kind of curious about you guys and your memories of Zelda back in the day. Now, Jamie, how were your thoughts on Zelda?
We played that when it came out more times than I can count, because I played, you know, both quests, and then I would play them again, and then I would play them again. And, like, I wouldn't even bother getting, like, the red bracelet. I would just play through, and, you know, it was just something I did. And then I didn't like Zelda 2, you know, had good music, wasn't my favorite, although I like watching Dan play it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I remember that, you know, kind of thing. I really liked it. I had the gold cartridge. Gosh, I mean, the only thing that toppled it in my gaming esteem was the Guardian Legend.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a lot.
Well, and
to topple that.
Even the Guardian Legend kind of owes a little bit to Zelda. And I think part of the reason why that game, you know, at least why I'm a fan of that game, is because it's not just some of the best parts of Zelda, but then it's like a shooter too. you know, it's like the best part of both of those kind of coming together. And I think that's what that made that game very special in many ways.
Well, and then there's other games that I really like that, of course, were influenced by that, like Newtopia and Newtopia mm-hmm. 2 mm-hmm. that were on the PC Engine or TurboGrafx.
Sure. I think a lot of...
A good number of...
Go ahead.
Hmm?
I was just saying,
there's a good number of games that I like that were influenced by the first one, most of the top-down games, you know, but I want to say that Legend of the Valkyrie came out before Legend of Zelda. I have to double check that. So I also see some other games that I like influenced the Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Games that actually influenced the Legend of Zelda kind of going the other way. You know, I would think certainly mm-hmm. something like Adventure on the Atari 2600 was kind of like an early kind of precursor to that style. Like, obviously, it's different. And obviously, with the, you know, Atari 2600 is a very kind of, you know, I don't think it necessarily had the same leverage in Japan where obviously Zelda came from. Go ahead, Jamie.
You remember, though, before I had a NES, I had a ColecoVision.
Yep.
And my favorite game to play on ColecoVision was Venture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very top-down adventure, dash in, grab the thing, dash out. And I saw The Legend of Zelda as a very logical evolution of that scenario with more story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was also, you know, one of, you know, it probably even took some influences from Rogue. I mean, if you think about
it. Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Bobby Blackwolf in our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork points out Intellivision had the AD&D games that were top-down dungeon crawlers. So it's kind of like there was kind of like a dungeon-y game on whatever you were playing at the time, but it just kind of depended on how they did it. You know, they all did it a little differently.
Probably say that Rogue would have been its great granddaddy.
Yeah, I think that's... did you just call Zelda a roguelike?
I did. Well, you think about it.
Well, actually, I would say a lot of people are super into the Zelda randomizer stuff. That mm-hmm. that is a roguelike. Absolutely. That's the only kind
of... I'm more referring to the overall...
Oh, I get it. No, I get it.
...themology of it, mm-hmm. where you have exploration that you do, you find secret panels, you have enemies to fight, you move your way through it, you map as you go.
Yeah.
So... I think that I would even go on a limb and say that Rogue is probably one of our Rogue and the text-based games married together created our adventure RPG series.
Mm-hmm.
As far as video games go.
How have you been with Zelda in the later years? Do you still try to play all the games that come out, or have you fallen out a little bit, or?
I never could get into Majora's Mask because the moon thing creeped me the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
But I've beaten Ocarina of Time, you know, several times. Link to the Past is my favorite ever. I played the sequel to it. Didn't really get in too much into it. We didn't play many of the... I played Link's Awakening on, you know, Game Boy back in the day. And of course, we have the remake on Switch. We played... Dan and I did Twilight Princess together. And I fucking love Breath of the Wild. Don't even get me started on how much I love it. We didn't play Skyward Sword for reasons, I think. Reasons.
Well,
we just really didn't have a reason. It just didn't happen.
You're going to get another chance, not to get too far ahead, but we'll get to it.
Right. We're getting it. We are getting it. Because Dan and I have been talking about, are we going to get it? Or are we going to wait? And then the announcement came. So, yeah.
And I think most people listening know it's coming, but we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Dan really enjoyed Four Swords Adventures. I didn't get into it that much.
Yeah, I like that one too. That was, man, those games that kind of utilized the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube, there was only a couple mm-hmm. of them, but they were all done so well. That was
Minish Cap was really cute, and I regret having not played more of that. You know, it was when I was going through a lot of, you know, video game ADD, you know.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about the Link to the Past being one of the all-time greats, and I totally agree.
It is my favorite.
I think it's my favorite Zelda 2 at the end of the day as well, and honestly, one of my favorite video games, like in my top 10, like overall ever, easily, maybe even top 5. I have to really sit down and think about it, but it is so many elements in it that just make it like the perfect, you know, kind of adventure game, and it's so replayable. But I think that's also why I really loved The Link Between Two Worlds that came out.
The Link Between Worlds.
Yeah, because that brought a lot of that same kind of style to it. So,
well, I actually have to tell you something.
Hmm.
You know how steadfast my top three games have always been?
Right.
My top three game list has changed.
Ooh. How so?
Because I've been going back to play A Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still going to say The Guardian Legend is number one, but A Link to the Past is number three now. Fantasy Zone is number two.
Okay.
Space Harrier, I've decided it's more fun to watch people play it than actually play it.
Okay.
I love Space Harrier, don't get me wrong. But yeah.
Number four is not a bad place to be of the millions of video games that have ever been made.
Well, I was actually going to say number four, Super Metroid.
Oh, well, hey, I'm okay with that choice. That's my number one.
And guess what number five is that isn't Space Harrier?
Ooh, you've really demoted Space Harrier over time.
I have, because I enjoy watching other people play it more than actually playing it myself.
I would be shocked if Mass Effect isn't up there, just with how much that trilogy has done.
And actually, it is probably a toss-up between the Mass Effect as a series, because I consider all three of them basically one game in my heart.
Yeah, of course.
Or, I mean, I've got like a big tie list because I put the Mass Effect series and Dragon Age as, I guess, more of my modern favorites. Like, I have two lists of favorites. I have my classic favorites and I have my more modern favorites.
You don't have to rank everything either, you know?
Divided by...
It's hard to rank art.
Divided by maybe the year 2000 gap.
Okay.
So my pre-California and my post-California.
Okay. Well, was that your five? Was Mass Effect / Dragon Age, or what?
I'm actually going to say Chrono Trigger and keep that as my favorite classics.
Mm-hmm.
But for my modern favorites, Mass Effect goes on the top of the list, and specifically Dragon Age Inquisition would be right under the Mass Effect series.
Okay.
I played so much of that shit; it was great.
All right. Loki, I got to hear from Loki. Loki, your reflections on Zelda's birthday as it turns 35.
Well, Zelda was one of the first games I had for the NES, so that was kind of how the NES was presented to me. I remember we had played, you know, different games at friends' houses and stuff like that, but like when my parents surprised me with the NES, they had Zelda booted up on it, and so that was kind of like my first game anyways. So yeah, it definitely does have a special place in my heart, you know, for it. And I played a ton of it, so yeah. And in all of the other Zeldas, except for a lot of the 3D ones, really the only thing 3D that I've played was probably, Wind Waker. I didn't really play, I guess the 3DS stuff is sort of 3D, I guess. So I did those as well. And also the DS stuff, but not really any like Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Skyward Sword, did not play that. Haven't really even played much of Breath of the Wild, so I don't know. It was just hard getting into those.
Are we surprised? You know, obviously we're going to kind of roll into the Nintendo Direct talk here in a moment, which is, you know, another big headline from the week, but are we kind of surprised that Nintendo didn't try to do like a classics type of thing for, I mean, to be fair, to be fair, let's make sure we state, if you have the Switch online, you already do have the original Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link, and Darksiders' favorite game, A Link to the Past, are all available in that, you know, in those two libraries. So they didn't have any need to repackage those games because they're already there on the Switch. But are we surprised they didn't try to do, you know, Ocarina of Time, you know, or some of the other, you know, maybe like a Ocarina of Time / Majora's Mask kind of combo thing, even though, you know, it's not just for Jamie that Majora's Mask is a little bit controversial, but some people love it, some people don't like it. I'm kind of in the middle with it. I honestly don't think I really spent enough time with it, and I think a collection like that would have really kind of given me a chance to revisit that again. Are we kind of surprised Nintendo didn't go that direction?
I still think that they have time to do that. We only know some of the announcements so far this year. I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility for them to do some sort of collection outside of Skyward Sword. I think that it's been rumored for a while that they're going to do something like that with Ocarina of Time and maybe even throw some of the other Wii games on there. You know, there could be Twilight Princess or... You know, they could do Majora's Mask. I mean, they've remastered both of those sort of for 3DS. And I mean, emulating the Wii is pretty easy. I don't know if they want to necessarily dive into the Wii too much because, you know, with motion controls and everything, that's not, they do have to kind of work around that a little bit. Maybe, but
that's one of the greatest things about this Skyward Sword thing and why I'm kind of interested in it is that it gets rid of that. I mean, well, I should say get rid of it. You can actually play a refined version of it, if you will, with the, you know, the more refined controllers on the Switch. But, and for a lot of people, this is huge. I already saw it in chat once. I know for me, the fact you can just use the buttons and just play it like, you know, other Zelda games and just play it with a controller, that's great for me. So it makes it a huge thing I would like to check out.
But I think that there's still an opportunity to do more stuff like that. I mean, if you remember for Mario's 35th anniversary, they did a bunch of stuff and they've announced things. I don't know if they announced it all at once. Maybe they did, but
I think they did.
There's still time in the year to do that. I mean,
true.
You know, there's stuff that's going to be coming out around, you know, June when they have all the summer announcements for around E3, which is not really a thing anymore. But I don't know. I could totally see them doing another collection of some sort. Just they have plenty of games to work from. I'm surprised that we haven't seen some of the DS games come back like as a collection of those. But I know that it's kind of hard to kind of do that maybe with the Switch, but
I don't think so. I mean, we've seen how many shooter games that have come out on the Switch now that have a vertical mode. So you could just play with your Switch vertical and you use the little, you know, you can mount it up and then, you know, just take one of the controllers off and you play with that. The pinball games do this too. You can play a vertical mode. And I think a DS thing would work fine in vertical mode, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do it. Maybe because they don't like the idea of being separated from the TV like that. Although why not just have a DS image on your TV? You just, sure, you lose a lot of real estate on the sides, but I bet people would still play it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's touchscreen functionality, I think is probably, why they didn't, but there's some of those things I think with even like Zelda and so the control scheme, they could probably adapt it to work because they had it, using touchscreen and it worked great for that, but they could probably adapt it with traditional controls. Or they can go the lazy route and just put the Nintendo 64 versions out.
Yeah, it's
and
what
throw
I would
Wind
expect.
Waker in there or something like that. I mean, they've already remastered Wind Waker once, just ported it over. I mean, there's easy ways out to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little more about that Nintendo Direct and some of the things that were talked about. Obviously, as we've mentioned quite extensively already, we know one of the big headlines out of that was that they're going to be making a Skyward Sword kind of redo on the Nintendo Switch. And Bobby's actually correcting kind of what I said earlier, saying it's not really button controls because you still have to identify the direction of your slashes, so you use the right stick to swing instead of hitting A. But that's it's still, you know, I don't have to jump around. If I want to lay back on my couch and be like, you know, and just have the, you know, I can still kind of play that way. I don't actually have to get up and move around and all that stuff. So I do like that. But I get what you're saying. It's not really a button, but okay. It's a flick of the thumb either way.
Yeah.
But anyway, what were some other, obviously I have some opinions on the Direct as a whole, and I'm sure you guys do too. And I mean, chat as well with that, but why don't we go through some of the headlines just to kind of refresh our memory with what all they showed us. Loki, I know you had something queued up for that.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, some of the big stuff, obviously, we just talked about Skyward Sword, which is getting an HD port on the Switch coming out July 16th. They made the announcement of Splatoon 3, which is really big, kind of a tease, but still not coming out until next year.
It was also one of those things where it was like, we've been talking about this for how long, and how did we not see this coming today? Of all, you know, like when they played the Splatoon 3 trailer, my mind kind of went, oh, of course. Oh, of course. That was kind of like where, of course. Yeah. Of course
they're
going to do something here. Yeah.
They showed off because we had gotten a tease. This was during the Mario 35th anniversary stream that they did, like back in September, I think, or maybe even before that, talking about like the Animal Crossing stuff that was coming out. So that's going to be coming out March 1st. With a free update, and they kind of showed off some of the items. One of the cool, unique things in there is you can actually get warp pipe to be able to move around your island, which is awesome. And I think a lot of the stuff that they have, especially like with the thwomps and the coins and stuff like that, pretty cool to see it all very interactive.
Somebody pointed out on social media that those warp pipes are some of the first like items that expand that actually give additional functionality to the island. I don't know. Darkstalker is the expert when it comes to Animal Crossing, but just real quick, picking your brain on what you thought of the warp pipe announcement, because that's more than just a decoration.
It's going to go in my town. I'm putting one by my house and one in front of my shops.
Honestly, I wish the island could be bigger now, like so we can decorate. And you could have like a whole like second island that you have to use a warp pipe to get. But I guess that's asking a lot. It's asking a lot, but.
No, it's nice. Not. Make it happen, Nintendo. Come on. You could even, not that I want to give you ideas, but you could charge a fee for it. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyways, got our next big Mario announcement.
Sorry, I should.
Mario Golf.
Sorry, just some quick other comments from chat. VO by Kurt. Hey, Kurt says, AC Mario announcement was awesome. And yeah, I got to say, there's so much that it looks like they're adding. You can really transform the look of your island a lot with that. And I thought that was pretty cool. So there is that. SJ100 Matt says, second island, also known as Item Hoarder Island. Yeah, that's what it would turn out for me. Kurt with another suggestion saying, if the warp pipe could be connected to a best friend's island, that would be amazing. Ooh, I like that. That's an interesting thought. Anyway, sorry, yeah. Loki. Other announcements. You were talking about the golf, right?
Yeah, so they have Mario Golf Super Rush, which is a brand new golf game coming out June 25th, and they're going to have some sort of story mode along with that with your Miis as well. So it's neat, I guess. Not Mario Kart 9, but we'll deal.
I did sense the kind of meh coming from Twitter on that one, but. Yeah, I feel like these arcadey type golf games have an audience. They always seem to sell. Hotshots Golf on
awesome.
PlayStation's always been a big one. And I gotta say, like for what it is, it does look neat. I'm not sure if it's something up my alley where I want to spend $60 on it, but I was like, you know, I know there is an audience for these games, and it does look like, you know. Nintendo always puts these unique spins on kind of the golf formula. And I always think of like the Kirby miniature golf. I don't think that was the name of it. Kirby Superstar.
It was Air Course.
Whatever. Yeah, Air Course. That, you know, that was basically a golf game. But it was a very unique kind of spin on it. So, I mean, I expect the game is going to be very interesting. And, you know, for that audience will be worth money. But I'm just not sure it's for me specifically.
It'll be interesting. They announced Fall Guys is coming to the Switch finally this summer. We got our new character for Smash Brothers announced, which is Pyre from Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And then she also transforms into some other character as well. So she's coming in March. Then lots of like really old games being announced and brought over. So we have Tales from the Borderland coming, Stubbs the Zombie. We've got also the Ninja Gaiden collection, Star Wars Hunters. Well, actually, that's a newer game now, but it's a game developed by Zynga. So take that as you will.
Zynga made that High Heels game I was talking about last week. So that's what you can. Where's my Switch port? Where's my Switch port of High Heels?
Your High Heels.
And I should be able to play it in vertical mode so my heels can get extra high. Just saying.
There's a new game called World Ends Club. World Ends Club. It's a detective story by the makers of Danganronpa that's coming out May 28th. We also had a game that looked like it was Octopath Traveler, but it's not. It's Project Triangle Strategy.
I would imagine it's them using that engine for a very different kind of game.
Yeah, it's like a tactics game. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. And they had a demo that came out already for that. They showed off that they're going to be doing a Miitopia game for the Switch, so bringing that over from the 3DS.
Where the hell did that come from? Who asked for that? I mean, I'm not dogging on it because I know that game has its fans. I know I have friends that were very like lit up when they saw the announcement, but it was definitely a of all the games I expected them to bring back, that was not the one I thought. But I guess that's what makes the announcements kind of fun. I guess.
They have announced there was that Capcom Arcade Collection that was coming out, Arcade Stadium. and this, tons of games included in that.
This was my thing. This was my favorite headline out of the whole thing, and I bought it. And I at $40 to get all of the games, but it's I think it's like 31 games.
They have a ton of games. Maybe 32.
They really do. And I will say for Dark Sakura, because I'm going to say the magic word that always gets her attention, Strider is in the collection. And it's the arcade. Yeah. It's the arcade version of Strider, and I have to say, I don't remember the last time I played the arcade version of Strider. It's been a long time, like since I was like fucking around with MAME a long time ago on a computer that wasn't good enough to run Strider. So to be able to play that again has been neat. I'll talk a little more about it in my gaming week, but the Capcom Stadium thing was like my favorite thing they announced because I love my retro stuff. And yeah,
and they have Cyberbots.
There's a
don't you know Cyberbots is Capcom's number one game?
There's. Uh-huh. There's a
it's a quote.
There's a real interesting mix of very mainstream stuff, like Super Street Fighter II, Street Fighter II Turbo, 1943, Ghosts and Goblins. You know, there's a mix of that, and then like really deep cut stuff in that collection. So I thought it was neat.
Yeah, so lots of cool stuff in there. So that was pretty exciting. I wish we'd see more of that kind of stuff. More release dates announced. So No More Heroes 3 is coming August 27th. There's a game called Knockout City that's by EA. It's like a dodgeball battle royale game. That's coming out May 21st. What else? We've got a shooter that's called Neon White. That's going to be coming out. It looked kind of cool. And they showed off The Legend of Mana is getting a Switch port as well. And so that's coming out June 4th.
I've got something to say. And this is going to get me in trouble, but I'm going to say it because it's my opinion. That's my opinion. The Legend of Mana is probably easily in the top three most disappointing games I've ever played in my life. And I know that is not going to be a popular opinion, but coming off of playing games like Secret of Mana, Secret of Evermore, and then buying that on the PlayStation, I was so disappointed. And so, and like one of the only Square Enix games to me that's more disappointing than Legend of Mana is Saga Frontier. So honestly, I am not feeling the Square remasters right now. Like this is not an era for me. And that's okay. It doesn't have to be for me. I know a lot of people that are very excited about that. And I will say, I'm not even looking at chat because I'm sure they're screaming at me. But I will say this. Maybe it is a second chance to try the game again and see if maybe something just didn't click the first time. You know, because sometimes that's the sort of thing that happens. But I don't know. I was not feeling the Legend of Mana announcement. All right, I'm looking now to see what's going on.
They had also announced, was it two mad. Famicom Detective Club stories that are getting localized? Pretty I've cool. never heard of that series.
I have. They're supposed to be pretty cute.
I mean, we can get that game localized, but no Earthbound 3, no Mother 3, or whatever. Nintendo and their priorities. Let's put out another game. Or, hey, I know. Let's put out a trailer for DC Superheroes or Superhero Girls Teen Power.
But that has an audience. The audience isn't me. But I was kind of like, oh, this is cool that this exists. That was pretty much my reaction to that trailer. I'm happy this exists, even though I'm not going to be buying it for me. But I bet other people will be very thrilled with that. I wanted to mention this because I thought it was a good comment from Bobby in our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, I think, honestly, this is because it's easier to coordinate development of a remaster over Zoom than a new game right now. We've now been out of offices for 11 months. This keeps developers employed. True, although there's one game they still can't seem to remaster. Give you a hint. Loki just mentioned it, Mother 3. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else to mention?
No, that was it. I mean, they showed off Samurai Warriors 5, which it's Samurai Warriors 5. And also along those lines, apparently Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity is getting some DLC. They didn't say what it was. They just briefly flashed up, hey, you can buy this. Don't know what it is, but.
Yeah, Nintendo's DLC is really good usually, so I'm not mad about it.
But it's not a Nintendo game. It's a Tecmo Koei game.
Yeah, but it's holding a Nintendo name, so it's they're still going to have to put a substantial amount into it, I think.
We'll see. So that's it.
How did we feel about the Direct overall? Okay, I'll start. So I was okay with it. Like, I was kind of ambivalent, which kind of surprised me because it's been so long since we've had a Nintendo Direct. But I think I was kind of like, okay. Like, you know, I knew we weren't going to get, like, Metroid Prime 4 game footage or anything like that. But I think maybe I was a little bit surprised. And I think this is generally, like, where Nintendo is at for, I think, a lot of people and why maybe there's, like, negative reaction out there. Because there's definitely people that are like, man, that sucked. That was a horrible Direct. I can't believe they didn't show, like, anything I was looking for, da-da-da-da-da. And there's another crowd that was like, that was a great presentation. There was something for everybody. And, you know, obviously the two sides are kind of going at each other. And I really kind of feel like I'm somewhere in the middle. But I think I understand why folks are upset, you know, at what Nintendo kind of doesn't show. And let me try to kind of put that into words. So I think a lot of people enjoy Nintendo products and the Nintendo system because Nintendo is probably the best game maker in the biz. So people buy Nintendo products to play Nintendo games. And that particular Direct, you had a handful of Nintendo games. You had the Mario Golf, which kind of has a limited audience, right? And the golfing thing isn't for everybody. Again, some people are going to be super into it and excited about it. Cool. But there are going to be people to go, meh. Okay. Then we have the Zelda Skyward Sword, kind of a controversial entry in the Zelda series, getting the remaster. So there's that. And some people are saying, paying $60 for a game I just played and didn't enjoy that much. I don't know. But then again, there's another crowd that, you know, loves that game and so forth. And then I think what really kind of salted people was the Splatoon 3 announcement. And it's not the fact that Splatoon 3 is coming. Again, I think that was actually probably like the least surprising thing they could have said. And I know that series. I enjoy, of course I'll buy Splatoon 3. I enjoy that series. I'm not saying it's a negative for me. What the negative is, was the 2022 date at the end of it. Even though, okay, wait, so this was supposed to be a Direct that was going to focus on stuff that's kind of like this year, but they're giving us this game that's this far out. Well, if they're going to be showing us this, like, what about these other Nintendo things? And what exactly does Nintendo have coming out in 2021? Okay, they've got a golf game and a Zelda remake. And I think people are starting to feel like, is the well dry at Nintendo? Has the pandemic really affected them like that badly? Or what's like going on? And so Nintendo's really had to rely on third parties, and especially Square Enix. If you look at this Direct, like, holy crap, was Square Enix a big part of that Direct?
Yeah, but like,
right?
When we're talking about third parties, like, or even second parties, I don't know, like, what's Retro Studios working on? I mean, like, weren't they supposed to have some big thing coming? Or like, what are they doing with Nintendo Online? Like, are we going to get any more systems on that? Are they going to release any more games on that? I mean, there's been, like, hardly anything coming to that.
And both of those things you just named, because Retro is basically Nintendo Studio at this point, both those things you just named are, again, Nintendo-based updates. And I think that's why this Direct left some people a little bit cold, is that you got some kind of like take them or leave them for many people, Nintendo updates, a game announcement for 2022 that anyone could have seen coming. And that's what Nintendo's got for this year. And now I imagine there's going to be more in June. And I'm not, again, I'm not trying to sound overly negative on Nintendo, but there is a difference between shitting on Nintendo, which is what I'm not trying to do, and being critical about some of, you know, what they, with the cards they choose to and not show. And I am going to continue to be critical of this because it bugs me, and I know it bugs a lot of you too, is that Nintendo continues to really sleep on a lot of their back catalog. Like, there's so many people that want to see Nintendo 64. Like, especially, you got a new Pokemon Snap game, which I'm surprised that was missing completely from the presentation. Although, there is a big Pokemon thing going on this next week with the 25th. So I think all those people that set themselves up for Pokemon Generation 4, I think we're always, the remakes and all that, I think we're always going to be wrong, because those Pokemon games almost always have their own announcements and their own thing from the Pokemon company. So, and that'll all come next week, whatever they're doing there. But Pokemon Snap is still a thing Nintendo's been hyping, and I'm really surprised they haven't taken the opportunity to say, and you can check out the original you know, whether it's $10 or, you know, whether it's through a new Nintendo 64 player or something like that. I don't know. You know, and obviously no one ever shuts up about Mother 3, and spoiler alert, they're not going to until it actually releases. And even when it does, it probably still won't be good enough for some people. But, you know, even just the fact that Earthbound is still missing from the Super Nintendo collection, the fact that the Wii U got that Earthbound Zero, which is still missing from the NES collection, is my point is that there's a lot of Nintendo's library and stuff that fans really want to see Nintendo kind of push more, and it's not happening for whatever reason. One remake of a controversial Zelda game isn't doing it for people. And I think that's what's leaving some people in a weird spot when it comes to Nintendo. So I think how you felt about the Direct really boiled down to, how do you feel about golf? How do you feel about Skyward Sword? How do you feel about the third-party releases?
I wasn't really excited about most of the Direct, honestly. Like, I thought that the Animal Crossing stuff looked neat, but I don't really play Animal Crossing. My kids do, and my wife does. So I was just like, eh. I was just surprised, like, I get it, you know, Ninja Gaiden is a great series, but that's an old game. That's a really old game that they're porting. Like, if it's a new Ninja Gaiden game, cool. I'd be all down for that.
Yeah.
But, like, it's an old game. Like, they're porting some old shit to this system. Like, Stubbs a Zombie? Who asked for that?
This was I get that, yes, they need to give a little time to Ninja Gaiden and stuff. I start to wonder if they maybe give too much time to these releases. But here's the why behind that. The Wii U really tripped and fell out the gate because all of the third-party releases that came out for the Wii U were old games. They were a year or two old at that point by the time they were hitting the Wii U. And that's why the third-party stuff really tripped and fell out the gate, and it just caused this Wii U to have a sour launch that it never got away from. Now the Switch has been in a much stronger position, but I feel like for some people it's almost a little bit like when they see the Tales from the Borderlands and the Ninja Gaiden and they see all that stuff, it's not that those are bad games, but they see Nintendo slipping back into this old habit that, like, years old games finally coming to the Switch are some big deal. When it's not, it depends on the game, but unless it's bringing something really new to the table, it's really not.
And it's not even necessarily Nintendo's fault for any of that stuff. It's just what third parties are deciding to release on the system. And it's like, I guess porting over old stuff is just what they want to do. I don't know. I wish we'd get more from these properties other than just ports of old stuff. Like, don't get me wrong, like, some of these games are pretty good, but Ninja Gaiden came out on the Xbox, and then the Xbox 360, like, and now we're porting that stuff over to the Switch. Like, who was like, oh my god, I need that? I don't know. I really don't see the point. I'm pretty sure, maybe it's one of the free titles with, Games Pass right now, and, you know, that stuff was always kind of synonymous with Xbox at one point, but I don't know. Like, why waste the Direct with that kind of stuff?
Let me get some comments over chat, and then I want to check in with Dark Soccer and see if she has any thoughts about the Direct. Then some comments from chat. SG100 Matt says, I think you have to couple this with the disappointment that some folks felt about a Switch Pro not happening anytime soon. Nintendo got a hit with Animal Crossing last year. Folks have been wanting more out of the Switch. And then Bobby Blackwolf says, I think the companies want to make new games, but they want to wait for the pandemic to be over so they can collaborate in person. And, you know, I will give everybody involved in these things a little bit of slack, because the pandemic has really just changed, you know, the world and the way we work and all of this stuff. So I understand, like, things are just so. But maybe in that sense, it feels a little weird to have brought out an official Direct now, you know, as opposed to these minis they've been doing. But I could see where Nintendo is in a position where it's like, we're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't, when it comes to the Direct. And I get that, and so I'm not going to fault them for it. And I'll make my last point, and then I'll get your follow-up, Loki, and then I'll go to Dark Saga. Is that – now I forgot my last point because I was trying to set all that up. With Nintendo, dang it. Well, my train derailed. Go ahead, Loki. What was your thought?
I was going to say there's better games that they could be porting if they're looking to do ports of stuff, like – I don't know, bring over some of the NES Remix stuff. That was pretty cool. There's, you know, I don't know, like they could pour it over like a bunch of older NES titles or something and put it in a collection or something, or just, I don't know, there's better stuff to pour over. I don't really know what to say. I mean, we've been getting like really old stuff, and it's not necessarily just a Nintendo problem. It's a lot of just developers out there, like even like EA publishing some, like bringing back Burnout Paradise again, and like, okay, that's a super old game. I mean, it's a fun game, but it's just, it's super old. All it does is make me want a brand new game. That being said, though, I'd totally take a collection of old Ridge Racer games, Namco, if you know you're up to it. But that's something we haven't gotten forever. Jeez, a new Ridge Racer game.
My final thought was, even if the Direct hadn't been, or if, even if the Direct had been that bad, or a bad Direct, which I don't think it was. I think it was just kind of like average. It doesn't tarnish that the Switch is still a great system, because there are so many great games that are on the Switch, you know, and the fact that 2021 is clearly going to be a little bit of a slower year for the Switch, probably because of the pandemic, doesn't take away from the fact that the Switch is the only place you're going to be able to play Animal Crossing, Breath of the Wild, you know, and a lot of the games that are very strong in Nintendo's library. So I think that's something to keep in mind, too, is that while maybe this Direct didn't like get people screaming about the future and so forth, I don't think it necessarily tarnishes the Switch as a system and something that people should consider adding to their library if they somehow don't already have one. Anyway, Dark Soccer, I'm sorry to make you wait, but I want to ask you, you know, do you play Switch, obviously, Animal Crossing a lot. What were your thoughts about the Direct?
I'm happy about the Animal Crossing stuff. I mean, that's really the thing I cared the most about. There's definitely a few games on there. Like, I'm really curious to see what Neon White is like. Mm-hmm. I like the art style of it.
Mm-hmm.
I, of course, Capcom Arcade Stadium. I know that there's going to be a lot of play from, you know, on that in my house.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to play Legend of Mana because I didn't before. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'll put it this way. I had, I think it was Legend of Mana that I had on PS1, but I had an import of it. So it was very text heavy and I couldn't read very well at the time in Japanese. So,
right.
So it'd be nice to actually see what it was they were fucking talking about. There's just really not, though, a lot other than the few things here and there that I'm really overly excited about. World's End Club is definitely something I'm interested in, because I mean, if it's Spike Chunsoft, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I love a lot of the games that they've put out, and I really love Danganronpa. Hopefully, it might be kind of similar, at least stylistically or in the feel of it. So I would enjoy playing that. And I mean, we were interested in playing Skyward Sword, so that's happy news. I'm really disappointed, though, that some of the other games were overlooked for either remakes or upscaled versions.
All right. Well, we could probably spend a whole 3 hours talking about Nintendo Directs. I'm sure there's going to be many YouTubes of that length that are doing that. However, mm-hmm. We still have some other headlines to cover. I want to talk about the other company that spent an hour talking about their upcoming releases, and I want to talk a little bit about BlizzCon Line. Now, BlizzCon usually happens in, what, like October, maybe November? Obviously, it didn't happen in 2020. We all know the reason. But they weren't able to kind of pivot to an online form fast enough. So they kind of did the online announcements thing now in February. So we kind of got like October's BlizzCon this past weekend, and there were quite a few things announced. I'll have Loki in a minute give the rundown, but Dark Soccer, I know one thing in particular caught your eye when it came to BlizzCon.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of The Lost Vikings, and I even remember playing, you know, World of Warcraft and being really excited to find them in one of the instances.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So that's really fun to me. Dan is super excited about Rock and Roll Racing. He loves mm-hmm. that game so much.
And all of that, of course, is in the Blizzard Arcade Collection, which is going to put together those classics that just came
right.
out.
Right, but But the other thing I think is cool, which might actually get me a little bit into the WoW Classic, is Burning Crusade, because that's when they started fixing how fucking terrible the game playing was.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be kind of nice to experience some of those things for the first time, because I didn't play that long in it. Then again, knowing me, I'd probably go, oh yeah, this is why I didn't like it, and not play. I'm completely uninterested in Shadowlands. Completely uninterested, because they fucked up Sylvanas.
Yeah, the story is very controversial in that regard, yeah.
They fucked up one of my favorite characters, so I'm done. I'll be honest, they haven't had a good storyline since Legion. And that was the last one I enjoyed playing. No.
Back on the classic, though, Burning Crusade was really the first one where I did have an account during Vanilla, and I think I played for a couple months, but I didn't really get sucked in until Burning Crusade. That was the
one. You remember
one,
the computer you gave me?
Yeah, we were raiding during Burning Crusade.
It was installed on that computer,
yes.
And it still ran.
Yeah. That's right. I had it on that little laptop. That's right, because Blizzard's been supporting Macs for the longest time. And
MacBook G4.
Yeah, that WoW was on that. Yeah. I think I played Wrath of the Lich King on that. I don't think it had a great frame rate, but it was there. But anyway, I do love that that's coming to WoW Classic. And I think it's very interesting, too, because, you know, there are probably going to be some people that are like, no, I want WoW Classic. I don't ever want to go to Burning Crusade. But they're going to give people the option. You can either keep your character on a vanilla server. No, I think you can keep it on the server it's on, and that server is going to progress into Burning Crusade. Or you can transfer it to a Vanilla Forever server. So it is interesting they're giving people the choice. And I wonder, I wonder if there won't be a Wrath of the Lich King, because that was really when WoW peaked for a lot of people. I wonder if that won't be a thing in another year or two, that they'll put the classic servers to that, and then that's kind of where they will stop. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Jamie.
No, I honestly enough, I wish that there was something like, if you have an active subscription to like just the main game,
mm-hmm.
that you had the full access to all of those varieties of servers.
You do. If you subscribe to main WoW, Classic is included mm-hmm. with that. And there is no separate Classic. It's just a WoW sub, and WoW gets you access.
You just pick the server then.
Yeah.
I thought that it was like a separate install or something.
It is a separate install, but you don't have to pay a separate fee. As far as the money is concerned, the money is it's a WoW sub, and it's a little drop down in the Battle.net client, kind of like when you're switching to public test realm. You can use a drop down to play WoW Classic as opposed to WoW current.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, neither of them are worth it for me unless I can just play, you know, Cataclysm again, and then I can play Legion again, and then I'll be happy because those were the two good ones.
So it'd be interesting to see if they do some servers frozen in time for all those expansions. We'll see. Okay, so Blizzard Arcade, Burning Crusade. Loki, what else came out of BlizzCon?
All right, so they also had talked about that they're remaking Diablo 2, which had been like kind of rumored for the longest time now.
Yes.
So better, you know, fully 3D graphics now. They're going to have cross-progression against both PC and console. And they're also doing a remaster of the original game, the expansion Lord of Destruction as well. And all cinematics will be recreated and updated shot for shot. Hopefully that's actually being done in like Warcraft 3, where they said they were going to do that and didn't.
I'm super excited about this, by the way. I'm really excited to jump back into the world of Diablo 2. I think it's interesting that it's PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and not the last generation. They're making it for the newer consoles. I find that interesting.
It still may be compatible with the other systems.
I also kind of wonder what cross progression really means. Like, okay, if I make a character on PC, then I guess I can use that character on console, but can I play with my friends like in real time, or is that still going to be separated like it is in Diablo 3? So there's still kind of some questions I have with that. Even the cross progression is interesting, although, does that mean I have to buy the game 3 times if I want to play on all my systems? You know, little things like that I'd still kind of like to know. But in general, I will buy the Diablo 2 remaster at least once, because that was a great game, and I'm excited to see what they do with it.
And then along the lines of Diablo, they talked about Diablo 4 as well, showed off the Rogue class So that's something. And then
and there was some gameplay with that too, and it looks really hot. I'm into it.
Yeah, and then talked about was it Shadowlands Chains of Dominion, and what else? We talked about the Burning Crusade expansion for WoW Classic. Hearthstone's getting a new expansion called Forged in the Barrens. The Blizzard Arcade Collection, which is pretty awesome. And Lost Vikings, Rock and Roll Racing, and Blackthorn. I've only played two of those. I haven't played Blackthorn. Yeah. And then was there anything about Overwatch 2?
So here's what happened with that. In the keynote, their hour-long opening ceremonies, they didn't really mention Overwatch at all. I mean, they name-checked the Overwatch League, and Overwatch stuff was still in the sizzle reels and all that stuff, but they really kind of left it out. So a lot of Overwatch fans after the keynote were kind of like, the fuck? Like, where's our update? What happened is that then they like BlizzCon wasn't just an hour long. They continued with panels throughout the weekend. And if you went right on over to Overwatch, that channel, and started watching there, which I think is what they carried on the main channel, because probably they knew it would be probably the beefiest thing, they did go into some more detail for Overwatch 2. And they showed off some new maps. They showed off that there's going to be like PvE with talent trees. They showed off that there was going to be the characters had aged. So like Soldier 76 and Reinhardt have beards now. What? And, you know, all these other characters have beards.
Oh my goodness. So different.
Oh my gosh. They're so old. So there's that. But it is a little weird to me that they didn't say any of that in the keynote when they really had everybody's attention. I think that was a real misstep about the keynote. And to kind of like, I should let you finish. There weren't any other updates though, right? I think you hit everything.
No, okay. That was it.
So the only thing with the thing overall is that now you have to remember, usually these presentations are done with a lot of screaming fans in the Anaheim Convention Center. So obviously something always felt a little bit off with that. Although I don't know, I think they did the best they could as far as that went in the pandemic kind of situation. But I was watching it along here at VOG Network. We were hosting it and I was commenting in chat. And one thing I noticed, it kicked off and they had this nice little company love reel going on thing. 10 minutes into their hour-long presentation, 1/6 of the way into their hour-long presentation, they still had not named a single game or product that was new or upcoming or anything. Because that whole 10 minutes had been kind of like, yay, Blizzard, yay, community, yay, our fans, we miss you, and all that kind of fluff. I understand why they have to do that. Blizzard does have a great community and all that stuff. But do you think maybe you could have given 2 of those minutes to just say, like, we do have some more information coming for Overwatch 2 throughout the weekend, including some new map reveals and what are these talent trees? Stay tuned to the Overwatch panel coming up next for more information. That's all they had to do, I think, to really kind of like quench the Overwatch people who really felt like after, like, through that whole Metallica concert, looking on Twitter and stuff, the Overwatch fans were pissed. And I understand. Like, I've been there. I've been the Diablo fan that got nothing at a prior BlizzCon, and it sucks. But, well, hey, at least you're not StarCraft, because they really got nothing. But I also thought, and I thought the way it ended was kind of, that's it? Jay Allard did a lot of like talking up of like, and we've got some other things to show you, even in some new worlds. We're going to take you to some new places and things you've never been or done. Like almost like they're getting ready to announce a new IP, which would be a great thing for Blizzard right now. And then they didn't, not even a frame, not even a picture, nothing. Now, I understand Blizzard is maybe hopeful that they're going to have a convention this fall, although, you know, again, I'm not going to try to predict the state of the world. You guess whatever you want. But Blizzard assumes they're going to do some type of announcements again in the fall, and maybe they're saving their new IP for that. Okay, but did you have to give us that dirty of a tease there at the end to lead to a big nothing burger? Like, again, couldn't you have just used that time instead to say, we have some exciting additions coming to Overwatch 2 as well. Although we're not going to be able to release the game in 2021, we want to update our fans on the latest of what's going on in the Overwatch world. Like, how fucking difficult is that? So I don't understand their logic and how they planned that out. Because I'll tell you, you know, maybe the Overwatch fans at the end, when all was said and done, were okay. But there's a lot of people like me who only watched the keynote and then had to kind of like get back to their other stuff that they had going on, like work or whatever. So they missed an opportunity to still not kind of put that stuff in front of me and many people like me. So that's my thought on that. Tiger Claw in chat says, so no jaw-dropping announcement at this year's BlizzCon. Confirmation of the Diablo 2 remaster, I think, is probably their big thing. I actually think the Blizzard Arcade and the surprise it's out today, and the fact that it's not just like a port of those games, but they really kind of went in and touched them up, did some quality of life things, the interviews, the widescreen support, the actual music in Rock and Roll Racing if you want it, even though don't stream it that way. But like all of that, I thought as far as like what they announced, they had a better year this year than, was it 2 years ago when they, or was it, no, I guess it was 20, was it just 2019 that they announced Diablo Immortal? And then they got dragged on that one. Like, this was a better BlizzCon than that. And they had some announcements and they had a product that was, it's out now. So there's that. And it's even something Bobby Blackwolf is interested in, the Rock and Roll Racing. So anyway, I actually think when all is said and done, despite the fact I'm nitpicking a little bit when it comes to, you know, what they could have done better, I think it was probably a better keynote than some of the ones they've had in person. How about that? How about that BlizzCon where the big announcement was the Demon Hunter is coming to Diablo? Was that 20? I don't remember when that was, but that was a rough year. Was it 2013? No, it had to be before that. Diablo 3 has been out a while. But yeah, anyway. All right. So there you go for BlizzCon. Ooh, we've had a lot of kickoff topics tonight, but there's just so many things going on in the gaming world that are all fighting for our attention. We do have some more headlines to get into, but I did want to take a minute to do our traditional How Was Your Gaming Week and talk about some of the video games that we have been playing this week. So, Dark Sakura, why don't we start with you? How was your gaming week?
Animal Crossing. Well, I mean, and I borrowed your Ring Fit Adventure. I haven't started it yet. Yesterday I'd thrown out my back working on something, so I was like, yeah, maybe I should rest that first.
But you are in possession of the Ring Fit Adventure. That did happen this week. So
I am, yes.
I look forward to hearing
you were in
thoughts.
Possession of cookies.
And the cookies were great. Alan and I both
enjoyed I made black sesame cookies, which taste vaguely peanut butter-like. Mm-hmm. And they're dark and goth and delicious. Anyway, we really haven't done a whole bunch of playing of anything because we're going to be starting some of the Capcom stuff when Dan gets home. So we've just really kind of had a slacker week for playing much of anything. I'm still playing Wordscapes. I made a 25th place in the last tournament.
Good job.
Wordscapes. And I like to come up with words that I know that they won't let me pick.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, anal. They never let you play anal or like urea. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, bones or body parts. Mm-hmm. That are actual real words.
I'm pretty sure I put dyke in one of them. And I think it went to the bonus list. I don't remember.
I just played lube.
It's a word.
It
you, could be, you could be talking about WD-40. You don't have to be talking about, you know.
But I mean, it's just pretty funny. For me, it's sort of like, how can I flex my vocabulary? It's like what I do to wake up in the morning to get my brain to wake up.
It's a nice little mental exercise.
Yeah, so it's really fun. You know, people want kind of a neat word game and check their spelling ability and what words they know, then try it. Right. So right after I played lube, I played rub.
All right. If that's it for your gaming week, I will go to Loki. How was your gaming week now that your game is out there and you don't have to worry about that, the pressure of that?
Well, I didn't play a whole ton of games. I played some Minecraft during the week, just kind of relaxing to that. I mainly was just taking a break from computer stuff during the week, trying to just watch more TV. But yeah, so I was also trying to promote the game during the week, but, you know, little luck there, but keep at it.
All right. My game of the week. I played quite a bit. I played, as I was talking about a little earlier, I was playing that Capcom Arcade Stadium. I did pick that up as soon as I heard the announcement. If you aren't already aware, you can get it on Switch, and you get it with 1943 for free. And you may not realize this, but if you go in the store, you can also get Ghosts and Goblins for free right now. I think that's a limited time thing till like maybe March 1st. But there's actually two free games available right now. I went all in and just bought them all. I was like, fuck it. Why not? I like a lot of these old Capcom classics. I'm going to buy it. I think the stadium is a pretty well put together collection. You know, they kind of theme it like you're in this old arcade with all the little sit down cabinets and, you know, so forth. And you can actually play the game like it's being projected on one of those cabinets. I don't like those over-the-top graphic filters myself. I understand the place for them, though. Some people enjoy them. But the nice thing is you can just play normal fucking on your TV. Like, it's fine. So I played a little bit of Strider I was talking about, which, boy, I'm fucking terrible at that game. That's one thing I learned. I'm very, very bad. Huh?
Everyone is.
I know. It's hard. It's a hard game. I played that. I played a little bit of Super Street Fighter, which I'm also apparently really bad at. So I think I need to turn down the difficulty or something. So yeah, I was playing some of the games in that collection. It's interesting because they have like little like tournament modes, like you can actually play. So I did the one for Ghosts and Goblins, and it was basically like, for this week, you're going to do this, and you're trying to get the high score you can at like 3x speed. So you have to play the game at triple speed. Which, I mean, that game's impossible as it is already, but try playing it on triple speed. And then you get, like, these, I think they're, like, Capcom points. I don't remember what they're called. They have a name to them. Like, these little pink numbers that appear in the upper right-hand corner. And they unlock things like additional frames that you can put around the screens as you're playing them and the things like that. So I think it's cute. It was a little more than just, you know, pick a game from the menu and play it. Ta-da. They really made sure the games are very customizable, that there's online modes where you can do different things and kind of mess with the game. I guess, oh, and this is cool. The shooter games like 1943, you can play them sideways. You can even do it on a TV, but it's great for when your Switch is undocked because you can play a shooter game. You can actually play it vertically. Any of those Capcom games, that's pretty cool too. So, yeah, I recommend check out the collection. You can just play the free games that are out right now and then decide if, you know, it's worth more money to you for the other games that are in there. So it's kind of fun. I enjoyed it. I've been continuing, of course, Final Fantasy 14, but what else is new? I play that game all the time. I've also been playing Final Fantasy 12, a lot of that. I talked about that a little bit last week. It's on Xbox Game Pass now. I am now past the point in 12 that's like the furthest point I've gotten to before. I got to Mount Boromis, I think is what it's called, and that is the point that I was left off at on a prior playthrough. I'm really enjoying it. I feel like the story and the mechanics have really aged well. I think there's so much, especially being a longtime 14 player, there's so much in 12 that 14 took influence from, which of course makes sense. I mean, I've always said 14 is an Evil East game, whether they want to admit it or not. But also a lot of the development team from 12 worked on 14, and it's very, very obvious. So I love 12. There's so many great things in it. But I also played, so this weekend, Xbox was doing like a free Fuser weekend. So the Harmonix game Fuser has been available this weekend for free. Time's almost up, though, so if you haven't picked it up by now, I think you're kind of out of luck because probably at midnight Eastern is when it goes away. But I don't know. Somebody might know the exact time. But basically, if you have Xbox Gold, you can play Fuser for free over the weekend. And so I finally checked it out. And that is the music game where you're basically taking like different tracks from different songs and overlaying them over each other. And you want to like do things on the downbeat. And then as you progress, you learn like, oh, but sometimes you want to do it kind of in the middle because that's the point when like the vocals really kick in. So you get like a bonus for that. If you can time when you're going to drop that Rick Astley record, right? So he can go, never going to give you up, you know. I will say, and also it's drop mix, but it's a game. I will say the technology of making your own mixes is a lot of fun. And I think especially like the freestyle mode is a lot of fun. The game is okay. But like, you know, okay, I'm mixing in requests from the audience and I'm trying to time things perfectly on the beat. It doesn't really have that same satisfaction, I guess, that something like playing Amplitude or Rock Band Rivals or something, like it doesn't really give the same, I guess, satisfaction that some of those games bring. But I really do love some of the creations that I've made in the game. Like I've really learned like, wow, Push It has a really great bass line that mixes with almost every song. And like every single part of Donna Summer's Hot Stuff is great. And you can mix it with literally anything and it sounds good. So
Donna Summer's a goddess.
Yes, that is true. And I will say the song list, even though when I looked at it, I was kind of like, eh. It has been curated very specifically for songs that really work like that. And I think that's done very well for them. All of that being said, $60. I get making games is expensive and licensing the music. And it's not just licensing the music because they have stripped these songs. I mean, you know, you have just the vocals. You have just the keyboard part and all this stuff. Like, I get that there's stuff with that. That being said, the game they are giving at the end of the day, I don't think I can justify $60 for it. It's too much. And then they have DLC, and then they have these, you know, $100 editions with all these other songs and so forth. It's just, it's too much. Sorry. It's too much of a premium for what it is. I think once the game comes down to $20, I'll buy it for sure. But I think this is where something like Drop Mix that was actually tangible, I can pick it up and take it to a friend's house. It's a physical thing. You know, the card mechanic is really interesting. I think that's where the high premium cost lends itself a lot better when it's actually a physical thing. So, I like Fuser, but I don't like it $60. I get that it's on sale right now for like $40. Still a little high for me for what it is. Yeah. So, Fifth Dream in chat says, I love the idea of the game, but the chances of them ever having a song I listened to in it, well, I will say though, there's a lot of songs in it that maybe wouldn't be on my playlist of music, but they're songs that I recognize. And when you break them down and put them back together into new songs, I do have that whole reaction of, huh, that sounds really neat. Some of them have been garbage. I've put together some real garbage songs, but I've put together some songs where I was like, I really like that. Loki, you especially. What's that?
Can you save them?
You can. I haven't played around a lot with that, but I know there is like a big community presence in there. And if you have your deck loaded a certain way, you can like save it to a favorites thing. So you can like pop all the records in there automatically at some point. So there are some little techniques they have for macroing. But I was going to say, Loki, I know you did a lot of mixing and stuff back in the day. I think you'd get a kick out of this game if you haven't played it yet. Again, I don't think
I haven't.
You'd be pissed if you paid $60 for it, but
yeah, I didn't want to pay $60 for it.
I think if they do another free weekend or it comes down in price, you should really check it out. I think you'd have fun with it.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. So that was my gaming week. All right. So let's get into some headlines. We've got a lot of stories to cover still, and we're an hour and a half in, so we should get to these stories. So Loki, I'll start with you.
So, Microsoft has this brand new feature for some of the backwards compatibility games called, frame rate boost or FPS boost, I guess is what it's called. And it is right now supporting about 5 games, Far Cry 4, New Super Lucky's Tale, Sniper Elite 4, UFC 4 and Watch Dogs 2, and they're going to be adding more games to that. Now, what that does is it allows certain games to run at a higher frame rate. So, for example, some games that were previously 30 FPS are now 60 FPS, or in the case of New Super Lucky's Tale, it actually runs at 120 FPS. And apparently this is also something that's compatible with the Xbox Series S as well. So pretty awesome. They found some new techniques, I guess, with the DirectX part of that to be able to push higher frame rates at not much of a system cost. So pretty cool to see some of that being added to some of these games. 60 FPS always makes things better. And I know like certain games like Watch Dogs 2, I bet that looks pretty nice.
You know, one thing I didn't talk about during my gaming week is Pokemon Go, because they had a huge event on Saturday. And I am tying this to what you just said, Loki. I'm not changing the subject suddenly. But I played Pokemon Go on Saturday because they had a huge event. And it was a really good motivating event for me to, like, get out and go around town and drive around and walk around and really try to collect a lot of Pokemon really fast for all the collection challenges. But one of the challenges, because it was set up like the original Pokemon game where only some Pokemon were for the red people and some Pokemon were for the green people, you had to do some trading. So I did some trading with Alan, because it turns out you didn't have to get the Pokemon during the event to get credit for them. So Alan hasn't really played Pokemon Go in a while, but he has a lot of old Pokemon on his account. So I got to play Pokemon Go on his phone for just a little bit, because I hadn't really seen it on his newest phone. And I was like, the frame rate on your phone is so much better than what I'm getting. And I'd heard something about, for whatever reason, the iOS version is frame locked or whatever. I guess maybe had optimization problems or whatever, but I noticed it. So that is the part that ties into what you're saying. When you have like that higher frame rate and everything, you really do notice it. It plays so smoothly. And I was like, man, I hope they figure it out on the other side so I can get the game this smooth, because I know it's capable. So ActDev says it's 120 hertz. Wow. Anyway, sorry. I don't know if you had anything else to say with that story, but I wanted to.
No, not really.
Yeah.
No, that's about it.
Microsoft has been doing, you know, it's funny, especially considering there was a time when Microsoft was like, fuck backwards compatibility. No one wants that. You know, that was under one leader. And then they had a new leader who's paid a lot of attention to backwards compatibility and really kind of making the old stuff stronger. And then even things that are relatively newer, kind of, you know, making them even better through the latest technology. Especially when there haven't been a lot of like PlayStation 5 or Series X exclusive or optimized or whatever you want to call games that have come out yet of these new consoles. It's nice to have these enhancements come out regularly that make the old games feel new again, if that makes sense.
So, yeah.
All right. ActDef is saying it's not necessarily the frame rate that's higher, but it's a different hertz setting. It's so smooth. I love it.
So the display refresh rate might be 120 hertz on his phone.
Interesting. I don't even know what kind of phone he has. We're a biphonal household. I have an Apple phone. He has a Samsung phone. So we love all types here in this household.
Do you have a good phone?
I like my phone fine.
That's what I'm saying. You have a good phone.
Yeah. Well, Alan would say he has a good phone too. He likes what he likes. I like what I like. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about a good classic franchise. Let's talk about Silent Hill. Sadly, I have no news on Silent Hill, but I have news about the creator of Silent Hill, Kichiro Toyama, who created Silent Hill, Siren, Gravity Rush. You may not realize he was involved with that too. But of course, he left Sony in 2020 and he started his own company, Bokeh Game Studio. And a little bit more information has come out about the first project. And he says it is inspired by his past as a horror game designer. A video came out called Focus. And in this video, it's kind of an interview, and he talks about the creative process. And there are some concept art that's shown for this untitled debut game coming from Bokeh Game Studios. And so if you were into Siren or Silent Hill, you're probably going to be into what these guys are cooking up. Now, of course, some people are saying, well, is it Silent Hill they're making? I'm not sure I get.
Probably not.
Yeah, I don't. I almost wonder if it's a little bit like Igarashi and Bloodstained, where it's like, we're not making Silent Hill, wink. We're making
Loud Valley.
Loud Valley. Exactly. Or Quiet Mountain. You know, it's going to be something, you know, very, very similar. But we'll see. I also, because I know this is another series, you talk a lot about Dark Sakura. As part of the interview, Toyama talked about being interested in the trend of death game entertainment like Danganronpa or the anime franchise Mirai Nikki as being an inspiration for this. So there could be some Danganronpa in your Quiet Mountain. So interesting. The idea of regular people driven into irrational situations will likely show up in the game. Hmm. By the way, there was a rumor that Akira Yamaoka was making music for an upcoming game. Again, I have a feeling they're not making Silent Hill, but they're probably making Quiet Mountain. So something to think about. Anyway, of course, now everybody in chat has their own names. Sia Tabiri says, shh, Savannah.
I picked Loud Valley because it's a quiet, it's opposite of Silent Hill.
I know, but I love, come on, tell me the name shh, Savannah isn't fucking funny. That's funny.
That is kind of funny.
What was the other name? Moderately Loud Mesa. That's a good one, too. Quiet Country. I love that you guys are all just lighting up with your knockoff names. It's great. What I ordered online versus when it arrived. No, that particular analogy isn't appropriate here because I'm sure the game will be fine.
Are we making the Wish version of Silent Hill?
No, I don't want to put that label on it because A, we haven't seen a frame of gameplay. We've only seen concept art. And B, it might be really good. Like Bloodstained's pretty good. So I don't want to necessarily say this is going to be a cheap-ass version of Silent Hill. It could be better. Let's give it that opportunity. Hushed Hollow. Sanctuary of Silence. Oh, good question.
I'd play that.
Orange Wright in chat says, I'm sorry, I didn't credit Pod Culture for Hushed Hollow, Phoenix 7726 for Sanctuary of Silence. Orange Wright is bringing up the cat ending. Yes, well, here's the thing. In Savannah, you get a dog ending. No, wait. No, the dog ending is Silent Hill. I'm sorry. Cat ending is... Never mind. I screwed that up. I get
and
it.
And instead of a UFO ending, you get like a ghost ending.
You get a paranormal ending.
You get a different kind of paranormal. You get a werewolf ending.
Sacred Jade. Pipe down planes. All right. Sia Tabiri brings up, no, but apparently there's a Five Nights at Freddy's knockoff movie that just came out with Nicolas Cage.
And I watched it, and it was awesome.
You saw the movie?
Really?
I did watch it, yeah.
Oh, wow. Now, that looked like the Wish version, but, like, in the good way, where, like, Showgirls is unironically good.
It was okay. It wasn't, like, it was cheesy. I don't know. They had parts that were really good, and then parts
complete
were
rip-off?
Just like kind of. It's not a complete ripoff. It's similar, but it's not the same.
Sia Tabiri in chat says that Savannah has a guinea pig ending. I know how to get Dark Soccer on board. How about a possum ending?
Yes, it needs a possum ending. I'll play that.
Yeah, so you can watch the movie. They have it available like through, I think, Vudu right now. I think that's where I rented it. And it's like $20 to watch Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah, I'm waiting for those premium fees to fade a little bit because I want to see. Everybody is telling me, because I love movies like cheesy comedies like Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion. Everybody's telling me that I would love that Kristen Wiig movie, the Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar or something like that.
Speaking of movies, did you happen to catch... I was going to say the trailer for Mortal Kombat.
Oh, good question. Good aside here before we get to the next story. Yes, I did. And it looks pretty cool. I mean, yeah. Obviously, no, you didn't like it?
They ruined Melina.
Oh, yeah.
Where's your face?
Yeah, well, but they apparently do have more for Melina. It's just they haven't shown that stuff yet. But apparently she does look like the original.
That's what I'm trying to cut him some slack on, too, is that maybe there's more to it than just the one scene we saw. I'm not a big violent person, though, but whatever. Mortal Kombat is so over the top. It's a little... But even, like, that scene with, like, Sub-Zero and Jax's arms, I was like, oh, God, that's too much. You know, like, wow. But it's...
It looked good. When they do a better trailer, I might be a little bit more excited about it, but... Yeah. The only thing on there that really looked exciting to me was them going into, it's clearly the original Sub-Zero, the one, you know, who was an asshole. Mm-hmm. But I don't like the audience insertion character, Cole or whatever his name is.
Oh, yeah. Like what the deal is there.
Fucking unnecessary. We don't need it. We don't need a character insertion, you know, an audience representative in it, because the people who are going to see Mortal Kombat know fucking Mortal Kombat. We don't need it.
Could that
same they said that they wanted to make a new character because they always introduce new characters in Mortal Kombat games. I don't think it. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of stupid. And where's Johnny Cage?
They're saving Johnny Cage for the sequel. They didn't want to. They wouldn't want to burn every character right away. I think that's what the deal is with Johnny Cage. Maybe Cole is new Sub-Zero. I bet there's a twist like that that happens. But obviously, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know anything. But
if they're sticking to any resemblance of canon, then it's somebody else who's a different Sub-Zero. It would be another Lin Kuei. So.
Oh, we'll see.
No, it's just terrible. And yeah, and like Sacred Jade said, Sub-Zero becomes Bi-Han. Well, Bi-Han is Sub-Zero, but who also later becomes Noob Saibot. So don't get me started on... I'm still pissed off about Sindel, okay?
Yeah, where was Sindel in that trailer?
No, I'm pissed off about what the last game did to her, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right. Let's move on, though. Sorry, we had a quick aside, but that was worth bringing up because you're right, I didn't have the trailer in a story slot. So, all right, let's talk about game leaks. Dark Sakura.
Well, Rare, I know a lot of folks here know about the origins of games, and we all know that, and if you don't know it, then you're about to learn a thing. Star Fox Adventures began as a game called Dinosaur Planet for the Nintendo 64, of course, by Rare. And... a game preservationist Forest of Illusion obtained a copy of the game, fully playable. I mean, some of the stuff is glitchy and doesn't necessarily play well, but it is the build from December 1st, 2000. So it's a late build of the game. And it needed a little work to be playable to the end. And so they actually have the ROM available for download through their Twitter. Oh, actually, their main link on their website went down, so they put up another one, but it's available through their Twitter account. But it was supposed to be like the big ending, you know, for the N64 was to have this game come out. It had environments and dialogue that used the RAM expansion pack, and it was a 512 megabyte cartridge. Would have been the biggest on the console. And yeah, no, this is, by the way, the same group that did the Zelda 64 beta earlier this year.
Oh, okay.
I downloaded it, so we'll see how that goes. I don't have an EverDrive for my N64, but you know, with a little bit of work, I could probably play it on my emulator.
Yeah. It's interesting to see these relics from the past kind of show up, even though, you know, I know we get into dicey territory with what should we be looking at versus what shouldn't we. But, you know, especially since this did kind of end up becoming something else anyway, I think it's an interesting part of gaming's history. So I'm kind of glad it's at least preserved, if nothing else.
And the bits that I've seen of it, I thought it was going to be a great game. I mean, it looked like it was... supposed to be pretty good. I mean, and the thing is that when the legend said that Miyamoto saw the footage and thought that it should be remade into a game with Fox McCloud, and that basically the team didn't really care for that idea a lot because they had to rewrite different places to accommodate Star Fox. And then they had to change a lot of the game structure. But basically, you know, they were all really attached to Dinosaur Planet and were, you know, had to change gears to put it in Star Fox. But to be able to go back and play what would have been the original game would have been great. So I'm actually pretty excited about this. You know, there were characters that were kind of small characters in Star Fox 64 that had bigger roles in Dinosaur Planet. And then, you know, so you can play through it and see elements that made it into Star Fox 64. But honestly, I think Dinosaur Planet would have just been fun on its own. I was pretty annoyed that, you know, it was something that didn't come out. And of course, there was also that playable build that they found of GoldenEye Xbox Live Arcade. So another leak.
Yeah. All coming from the Rare stuff. So neat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on with another story. Classic Game of the Week coming up, but first, Loki.
Yeah, so there was this big Skyrim mod called Worm's Tooth that was developed back in, well, actually quite a while ago. It was removed from Nexus Mods back in 2016, apparently by the original author. Now he has brought it back and has brought it back with a brand new trailer, which is pretty awesome. So one of the things I thought was actually kind of unique about this is the actual trailer itself. So he uses a text-to-speech AI to recreate the Skyrim voice actors, and it sounds really cool, which makes me think, you know, hey, when people are putting together these new expansions to the game, a lot of times they will have their own, like, voice actors come in and do the lines. Well, now they could just use, you know, this AI to generate, you know, basically the dialogue for the game using the original voice actors, which may get them in some hot water or not, who knows, but it's pretty cool. So it's available now if you want to check it out on Nexus Mods.
All right, I'll have to get Alan's impressions on that because he loves the Skyrim mod stuff, so I don't know, that, like that has to be on his radar.
Yeah, Worm's Tooth, it adds a whole new like island to basically explore, and there's a bunch of side quests and stuff in there. They have new companions. You can get like a wolf follower and lots of cool stuff that go along with that. So it looks cool. I have to really go back into more Skyrim again. It's been fun. My kid actually wanted me to get it for him, so I picked up a Switch version as well. So they're going to be playing Skyrim.
All right. Well, moving on to a story that's pretty frustrating, honestly. It's another Stadia story. I'm sorry, but they keep taking headlines. What can I say? Apparently, the folks at Google that were laid off from Stadia were pretty shocked by the news because just the week prior, Vice President and General Manager Phil Harrison had sent out an email to everybody that said great progress that the studios have made so far. And then the mass layoffs came just a few days later. An email that was sent by Phil Harrison said, Stadia Games Entertainment has made great progress building a diverse and talented team and establishing a strong lineup of Stadia-exclusive games. We will confirm the SG&E, Stadia Games Entertainment, investment envelope shortly, which will in turn inform the SG&E strategy and 2021 objectives and key results. Of course, 5 days later, they were all gone. No comment from Google on this whole thing as well, but I mean, it does also just add fuel to the fire where, you know, how the fuck does Phil Harrison still have a job right now? I'm just gonna be blunt. How does Phil Harrison still have a job right now at Google? Because if everybody else was getting cut, he should have got cut too. Sorry about it, but this just kind of adds fuel to that fire, as far as I'm concerned. So it'll be interesting to see what ends up in the coming months that come from this. So Jade Raymond also had said in a statement, by the way, after the layoffs, you know, kind of the nice PR thing. I don't think she said anything that you can read too much into, but I am proud of the team we built at Stadia Games Entertainment and the groundbreaking work on exclusive games for the platform. It was a difficult decision to take on a new opportunity, and I will be forever grateful to this team for everything we learned and achieved together. Yeah, so that is unfortunate how that whole went down. ActDeft in chat says, hey, you're doing great. Keep it up. Just not here. That's unfortunate. All right. Hope those folks are able to find work that they enjoy within Google or somewhere else, like Jade Raymond. All right. Moving on. And excellent counterpoint. Sorry, I guess not moving on, but excellent counterpoint by Phoenix7726 in chat saying, how does Yves at Ubisoft still have a job after the sexual harassment scandals he covered up? And how did the CEOs at CD Projekt Red still have a job right now? I thought for sure one of them would be gone by this point. Isn't that shitty how all the people in power just never want to leave power?
It's because the shareholders like money and they don't really care about people.
Well, the thing is, Stadia is not making money.
Anyway. Well, that's true, but it's Google though. So you don't invest directly in the Stadia, you invest in Google as a whole, and
true.
They're making money. It's just, true. They just spread themselves too thin with some of this stuff and do a half-assed job about it.
All right. Well, let's take a trip down memory lane to a time when development was a little bit simpler and at least it was a little more innocent, maybe. It's Classic Game of the Week. And every week, Dark Soccer steps into the vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, maybe you kids should be playing this game this week. Dark Sakura, what classic? Well, actually, I already know. So I can say you picked a classic among classics that I'm kind of surprised wasn't in your modern list earlier, actually.
I seriously thought I had done this one, too.
Me, too.
Like, I checked the classic game list. I don't know if you did.
Yes, I double-checked. I'm usually fine with whatever you say, but then sometimes I'll have that nagging voice that is like, I swear we did this. And this one somehow wasn't there.
The game is Portal.
Portal?
And I even checked to see if I had just done the orange box, you know?
Yeah.
No.
No.
But I did think I did Narbacular Drop.
You did.
So maybe that's what I was thinking of. Which Narbacular Drop is pretty fun. But anyway, to go back into Portal. Portal, basically, it was a game that was developed and published by Valve in 2007 that was released with the Orange Box. Came out on Windows, Xbox 360, and PS3. And, of course, there's been other ports, including macOS, Linux, and Android. It is a series of puzzles that have to be solved by teleporting through the game using the Aperture Science handheld portal device. And you get talked to by GLaDOS, who is definitely, motivating, I guess? I don't know. Chell is, and it's not Shell, it's Chell. As we've heard in various makings of, who is taunted by GLaDOS and still must go through the game and make it to the end through clever use of portals. But going back to a little bit of history of the game was based on a concept from a game called Narbacular Drop. That was created by members by people at DigiPen Institute of Technology, and they were hired by Valve to make Portal. So Portal is actually the spiritual successor to Narbacular Drop. You can still play Narbacular Drop, by the way. So it was really lauded as one of the most original games to come out, which really says something, because we don't really get a lot of people talking about originality. GLaDOS was voiced by Ellen McClain, who is absolutely delightful and talented. And then, of course, we had one of my favorite hilarious singers, Jonathan Colton, do the end song, Still Alive. I've always been a big fan of Jonathan Colton, so of course I was really, really tickled. And I got to meet him, Rob. Remember when we went to PAX? He let me take all kind of pictures with him. He was a really nice guy. Anyway, Portal has been even cited as one of the greatest games of all times. Outside of Steam downloads, over 4 million copies of the game have been sold since its release. And there's merchandise and plus, weighted companion cubes and fans making the Black Forest cake because the cake is a lie. Portal guns. And then there is a standalone called Portal Still Alive that was released on Xbox Live Arcade service in 2008 that had 14 more puzzles, and of course Portal 2 in 2011, which we will talk about at another time. Anyway, like I said, you play Chell, you play first person, and you have to use the portal gun to open an orange and a blue portal in different locations. So one, you exit through whichever one and exit through the other. It's basically moving through three-dimensional space, but you also have physics to play along with it. For example, if you want to fling yourself across a room, you can throw a portal on the top of the wall, like way above you, and then put a portal on the ground and jump into it, which would give you forward momentum to cover a large gap. they do call that flinging. And then, of course, you get reoriented because of gravity when you go into the right end portal. So you cannot pass one shot through an open portal. You just have it will deactivate it, and then you have to create a new portal and a new offset. So basically, you can do things like move objects, and you have different wall surfaces, and you can anchor in different places. Sometimes they won't link to certain walls, so you have that to deal with. And then you're also given these little cubes that you can use to press down buttons and levers, and you know, use it to activate different mechanisms. And then when you're done, you have this particle field called the Emancipation Grill. So it actually, in the developer commentary, they called it fizzlers, that would anything that you carry with you apart from, you know, yourself and the portal gun, and deactivate the portals in the previous room. They also will block any attempt to fire a portal through them. So Chell also wears these heel springs, to keep from falling, which I believe they were called the long fall boots, or maybe the long fall boots or portal two.
No, they're long fall boots.
Okay. And she, you know, she won't die from falling from a great height or anything, but there are other things that can kill you. Bouncing balls of energy, toxic liquid, deadly neurotoxin, and the turret guns. Turret guns are hilarious and adorable, and I love them. I have a couple of little ones. And true story, when I was learning Maya in college, my final presentation was a portal turret, and my teacher liked it so much that he made me shaders and light sources for it. So I was pretty happy. So basically, if Chell gets a certain amount of damage in a short period of time, she will die. But she does restore her health fairly quickly. And there are multiple solutions to the puzzles. I mean, yeah, you've got a main way to do it, but sometimes the fun of it is deciding on different ways to solve those puzzles. And then as you keep going, you'll get some different challenge maps, advanced chambers you get when the game is completed. You have challenge mode. So you have to complete like test chambers with as little time as possible, or the fewest portals, or the fewest footsteps. The advanced mode are a lot more complicated. So basically, you have your two characters, like I said before, and Chell is the silent protagonist. And then there's GLaDOS, that stands for Genetic Lifeform and Disk Operating System, who is an AI who is obsessed with testing, and you must test. You have to test. GLaDOS is also a liar. Basically has just made up a lot of crazy backstory that may or may not be facts, such as Chell being adopted, an orphan, having no friends, and questionable. There is also a comic, which I actually super like, called Lab Rat, that talks, that's the gap between Portal and Portal 2, that basically where Chell was rejected as a test subject for having too much tenacity. And so they use Doug Ratman. Then you actually get stuff for Ratman in the second game, but he moved Chell to the top of the test queue. So you're in this research facility, and in Portal 2, they said that it's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And the lab is for Aperture Science, which was a competitor with Black Mesa. Except that Cave Johnson, their founder, was crazy. He was supposed to make shower curtains for the U.S. military, and he became mentally unstable from moonrock poisoning. And we'll get into more of that, because that's all backstory on there. But yeah, they were complete competitors with Black Mesa. And for the record, pod culture, Portal, that is not exactly how the line went. I'm a potato. I think it's, how are you doing? Because I'm a potato. Because, anyway. Anyway, so moving forward. as you keep going through the test, you know, you come across a cube that has a heart on it, and it's the weighted companion cube, and it has a heart on it, and it's your friend, but GLaDOS tells you it has to be euthanized through an emergency intelligence incinerator before Chell can continue. And then there's, you know, the turrets have these cute little voices. I don't hate you, you know. And then they're sympathetic when you kill them. And then the final chamber, this is the part where she kills you, which was actually in Portal 2. There was a part called This is the Part Where He Kills You. So anyway, you keep having these signs for cake, and she talks about, GLaDOS talks about cake, but the cake is really a lie. And you get to see graffiti as you're going through the game that has the statements such as the cake is a lie. You have pastiches of The Chariot by Emily Dickinson and The Reaper in Flowers by Longfellow and Emily Bronte's No Coward Soul Is Mine, but referring to the death of the companion cube. So at any rate, you eventually escape through some clever use of portals, and you're playing behind the scenes, which is actually my favorite part of the game, is I love going... I have this thing about games where I want to go to the places I'm not supposed to, and in this case, the places I'm not supposed to go to are actually the places that you're supposed to go to in the game. So basically, spoiler alert, when you defeat GLaDOS, you're escaped, and then you get dragged away by an unseen entity in a robotic voice that thanks you for assuming the party escort submission position. And then the final scene is you see the Black Forest cake and the weighted companion cube and a mix of inactive personality cores. And then the cake gets the candle on the cake gets snuffed, just like that.
I like the speed runs where they actually get to the cake.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you can do that through a series of clips. I mean, there's still glitches in the game. So, but at any rate, like I said earlier, Narbacular Drop, which was the spiritual predecessor. Was developed in 2005 by students at DigiPen, and then they were hired by Valve, and they really... Valve became interested in it at the DigiPen annual career fair and really wanted to bring them in and have them do work on it. So a lot of really crazy development went into it, and they were given pretty much free rein to make the game as they wanted to, basically without constraints. So they basically worked on gameplay without any narrative. They just wanted to have fun, but they wanted to know what the test chambers were leaning toward, you know, when people were playing it. So they came up with the narrative for it. And basically the game has this very clear beginning, clear middle, clear end, with GLaDOS narrating the entire way as you go through it. And then they use the cake just as, you know, part of the developer process and just threw that in there because people like cake as a joke. So they kept the settings very austere because they wanted to do the puzzles. They wanted there to be able to complete the puzzles without having too much decoration or anything non-functional. So they kept it pretty minimalist. I'll be honest, there are certain parts of Portal, even though they're not perfectly, you know, cubed out rooms, that kind of make me think of Cube. You seen that movie, Rob?
Oh, yes, I have.
And I'm sure Loki's seen Cube. But you know how in the different rooms in Cube, each of them like will have their own little trap or their own challenge or something. And for the record, Hypercube is my favorite in that trilogy. The third one was shit, and the first one was great, but I prefer Hypercube.
I hear they remade the first one. They have
the first
a Japanese
Cube
movie now. Yeah, there's a Japanese version now.
I'll have to look for it. Yeah, I also liked Cube because it had Nicole DeBoer in it, who was Ezri Dax. But at any rate, I'm not going to get too much more into a lot of the development of the game, because really, you can go through... I mean, there is actually, like, a walkthrough version with development points that you can hear commentary from the developers. Basically, the Aperture Science handheld portal device, abbreviated as ASHPD, is also a shortening of the name Adrian Shepard, who is the protagonist of Half-Life: Opposing Force. So that's kind of funny. And then the Black Forest cake was chosen based on a Black Forest cake at Regent Bakery and Cafe in Redmond, Washington, as an Easter egg in the game. So, and then the Regent Bakery since then stated that their Black Forest cake has become their best-selling item. So it has a lot of her music in it. It's very ambient, kind of mysterious. And it really just adds to the technical feel of the game, like you're in a lab. And then, of course, Still Alive by Jonathan Coulton was sung by Ella McLean. And, I mean... she's a classically trained operatic soprano, so which I've heard interviews of her doing, you know, actual opera, and I think that in the end of Portal 2, that was her singing as well. But you also get kind of like sort of up tempo Latin versions of Still Alive playing over through, you know, radios and everything. And so you can get the soundtrack. With the Portal 2 soundtrack, it's Portal 2 Songs to Test By. You can get that via Steam Music, or if you can find it to buy. So basically, like I said, it was released with the Orange Box for Windows and Xbox 360 on October 10th, 2007, and a PS3 version on December 11th the same year. You could also just get the Windows version separately through Valve's service Steam. And then they had a standalone retail one. In addition to Portal, the Orange Boxes included Half-Life 2, the two add-on episodes, and Team Fortress 2. And then basically, I mean, no one knew what people were going to think of Portal. It was pretty safe to have it on there, but it was really popular. And then there was a demo version in January 2008 called Portal the First Slice that was free for any Steam user who's using NVIDIA graphics hardware for, so it was like a little collaboration. And then, there were, test chambers 0 to 10, so there were 11 total. And then it was also the first Valve game to be added to the OS X compatible list of, games on the Steam client. For Steam Play. So that was also, you know, very good. It was a free play title for Steam users during the first 2 weeks following the Mac client launch, so there was that. And then Portal Still Alive, I brought that up earlier. It had the original game, 14 new challenges, and different achievements available. And then, you know, don't forget, there's also been some Portal collaborations, like what was the Bridge Builder game? That had a Portal version?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bridge Simulator or something like that.
Yeah, Bridge Simulator or something like that. Yeah. And at any rate, the game has been just absolutely adored. It got great ratings. Metacritic gives it an aggregate score of 90 of 100. It's got 9s out of 10, 9 out of 10, 4.5 out of 5. You know, so it's been... really just well received. And it's won many awards. I knew this one was going to be a long segment. It won the Game of the Year Award, also Innovation Award and Best Game Design Award at the Game Developers Choice Awards in 2008. GLaDOS got Most Memorable Villain from GamePro. It's basically, it won a bunch of awards. And Time Magazine ranked it in 2012 as one of the top 100 video games of all time. And Wired considered it to be one of the most influential games of the first decade of the 21st century. So, stuff. I don't know what happened to my weighted companion cube Fuzzy Dice. I know I had a pair. But there's so much merchandise. Like, I have a Weighted Companion Cube plush, which is somewhere behind me. I have a...
We don't have your cam up right now. We're still looking at the game.
Oh, well, I have one. My dice are somewhere. I have Weighted Companion Cube dice. You could get, like, Aperture Science mugs and stickers and all kinds of stuff.
But you know what you can't get is Portal 3.
Hey, that's because Valve can't count to three. Then again, they're Capcom eventually learned games. How to. So, but you know, the cake is a lie has become like even people who never played it pretty much know what the cake is a lie is. There's a modding community around Portal that did their own test chambers and modifications. There's a group called We Create Stuff that had an Adobe Flash version of Portal called Portal the Flash version. It came out just before the Orange Box. And it actually was converted to a map pack for the final game. There was a mod called Portal Prelude that focuses on the pre-GLaDOS era of Aperture Science with crafty and challenging test chambers. There's an ASCII portal. There is an unofficial port to the iPhone using Unity, but it only has one room. There's Mario, that's with a zero, which is a fan-made four-player co-op of mashup of Super Mario Brothers and Portal.
It's going to be a six-hour show tonight if we cover all the mods.
I know. I'm just going over some of the major ones. But basically, the original game had Chell just left in the parking lot. But the update had Chell being pulled back in by a party escort bot for the Portal 2 release. And you want to know what's great about Portal 2? It was released on my birthday in 2011.
That's right. But you know what they haven't released is Portal 3.
Rob, because Valve can't count to three.
Well, it's just
you're going to have to talk to whoever helped Capcom with their developmental, you know, skills to teach them how to count to three.
I want
to
know. Then we'll get Super Portal 2 Dreams Come True Edition for matching service and all that stuff.
What about Team Fortress 3?
All right. I think we've covered all the angles of Portal, the classic game of the week, a real classic. I remember when this game first came out, and I think we kind of missed the Orange Box when it first came out, but then we started hearing all the hype about Portal, and we kind of went back and experienced Portal, and it's pretty amazing. It's a wonderful game. All right.
Well, you know what's funny is that I had Becky over one time to play that one scene with the lemons in Portal 2.
Oh, yeah.
But it's actually led to one of my favorite songs called The Ambition Song, where basically it sounds kind of like, what's that name? I cannot think of his name. The dude that did Uptown Funk? No. And I'm thinking of Mark Ronson because he's also worked with him, but... But anyway, he had
Bruno Mars.
Thank you.
Bruno Mars.
He did.
It's like I can sing it, and I can't name the guy.
But he did like that lazy song, you know. Today I don't want to do anything. But they took a kind of a mashup of that and the radio version of "Still Alive," you know, with the horns and everything, and made a song that's nothing but Cave Johnson ranting, but rhyming. And that song is fantastic. It is one of my favorite things to come out of Portal.
All right.
I think did Pod Culture just link it for us? So don't listen to it now. Listen to us. But that's the lemon speech. I'll have to find the ambition song for everybody later.
All right. Plenty a longer segment than some runs of the game, but it is one of our all-time favorites after all here at Orange Launch Radio. It's Portal, the classic game of the week. Good. Good pick. Again, surprised we haven't picked that one before. All right, let's quickly travel around the world and check out some other quick headlines in rapid fire news. Loki, we'll start with you.
So For Honor is getting some Shovel Knight content. Unfortunately, not Shovel Knight himself, but outfits and emotes, which I guess is kind of cool. Those are going to be available in For Honor until March 4th. It's a limited time thing. So check it out. And then also, the company behind the game Minute is doing a kind of a racer spinoff of it. and it's for charity, which is pretty awesome. So you can check that out. I believe that's on itch.io, called, I want to say it was like Minute Fundraiser. And it looked kind of cool. So 100% of the proceeds are going to charity.
Minute's a cool little title.
It is. And the game looked pretty fun, the little racer as well. So check it out.
All right. Going on to some headlines I have. I honestly thought this game had been canceled at this point, but it hasn't. It's New World, the MMO coming from Amazon Game Studios. This game was originally supposed to be out in May of 2020, and now it's slipped all the way to August 31st, 2021, a closed beta starting on July 20th. Obviously, a lot went wrong with 2020, so I understand the multiple delays, but I thought the Amazon internal developments were having a lot of problems. But we'll see how the game turns out at the end of the day. So there's YouTube if you want to see a new interview with the game director, Scott Lane. But anyway, I might check that out when the beta starts. Well, it's a closed beta. Maybe I'll get in it somehow. But I can always check out the full version when that releases in August. Could be interesting. Jason mentioned this in the intro tonight, but more media coming from more games. This one's a little surprising, though. Dota 2. Speaking of Valve, and there'll never be a Dota 3, because why would there be? There's a Dota 2. Defense of the Ancients, of course. Well, of course, this game is still huge. I mean, you know, so many people and everywhere around the world playing this game. Dota 2 is getting an anime series from Netflix. It's called Dota Dragon's Blood. This is the same studio animating it that did Voltron Legendary Defender. So that's kind of neat. It's an 8-episode series, and it's going to come out worldwide on March 25th. So more gaming stuff on Netflix. Not that I think any of us are complaining. Dark Soccer, what do you have for us?
There's a game actually that I was really into called Firewatch. It's a really good game.
Oh, yeah.
So on the Switch version, there's actually a little hidden secret game on it. And it's only on this one. So for the 5th anniversary of Firewatch, Cable Sasser, who is the co-founder of Panic, shared a secret that has a note that was stuck to a random sign in a game. And once you find it, you get a new location on the map that follows through, unlocks a game called Forest 64, which is a hidden N64 inspired platformer. And it looks like you play as a little bear, just like running around collecting stuff. It's pretty cute. You actually even get like an achievement for it.
That's crazy that this was in the game the whole time and nobody ever found it till
only
now.
In the Switch version.
Yeah, only in the Switch version, which maybe is why people didn't find it, because they weren't expecting the Switch to have anything special for it. So who knows? And it is pretty convoluted the way to find it, but it's always neat to find these little treasures way after the fact.
Yeah. And it, also, SNK is working on a Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection Switch compilation. So that'll be cool. I mean, we would have why can't I make words happen? SNK versus Capcom Match of the Millennium. Hopefully we'll get a few other things. I mean, there's also going to be King of Fighters R2 and Samurai Showdown 2. Last Blade Beyond Destiny, Fatal Fury First Contact, which I think I have all of those, I want to say. I know I have King of Fighters R2 and Samurai Showdown 2, and I know I have Last Blade because I fucking love Last Blade. But it'll be really cool to see those, and I won't have to, you know, dig out my system to play it. So there you go.
All right. Lots of good retro stuff there. All right, let's travel around the world and check out some things that are coming out a little sooner than that Neo Geo Pocket Color selection. World release dates. Let's start with Loki in the U.S.,
So we've got Curse of the Dead Gods on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Horned Knight on PlayStation 4. Persona 5 Strikers on PC, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 4. Rogue Heroes, Ruins of Tassos. And that's on PC and Nintendo Switch. We Were Here series on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. Horn Knight also coming to Xbox One. We've got Cotton Reboot on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. Darius Cosmic Revelation on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. Forward to the Sky on Nintendo Switch, Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection on Nintendo Switch, Hellpoint on Nintendo Switch, Wrath of the Aeon of Ruin. We've got that on PC, Mac, and Linux, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Yakuza Like a Dragon on PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X, which is weird because I swear to God that was already there and I already have it. But apparently, maybe a different version of that's coming out. Bravely Default 2 on Nintendo Switch. And let's see. And finally, Horned Knight also coming out on PC and Nintendo Switch. I like how they staggered that throughout the week. And the Yakuza Like a Dragon thing, that's confusing. Oh, that's for Japan.
All right.
Which is weird. You would think they would have already had that.
Well, let's get to the Japanese release dates. Yeah, it's a busy week in Japan this week. There's a lot of stuff coming out. A lot of overlap with some of the things Loki just mentioned. On the Switch, Darius Cosmic Revolution comes out. One Step from Eden is also out this week. Code Realize Wintertide Miracles in a regular and limited edition. The Cotton Reboot in a regular and limited edition. And yes, that's the same Cotton series that Darksoccer has brought up a lot. So, but it looks like a new game.
The X68000 version in it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So
that makes me so freaking happy. I love Cotton.
You might have to pick that up. All right.
Well, no, it's on my list to pick up. If you're going to buy a physical copy, though, it's through Strictly Limited Games.
Mm, got it. Yeah. Also on the Switch, Forward to the Sky in a regular and limited edition. The Legend of Heroes, Story of Seasons, Pioneers of Olivetown, and Kinero Love Reach comes out, and Jinky Resurrection. That is just the Switch. Going to the PlayStation 5, nothing this week in Japan, so it's a quiet week on the PlayStation 5. Let me check the PlayStation 4, though. Yeah, a lot of overlap there. The Cotton Reboot is out on PS4, Darius Cosmic Revelation. There's a Kemco RPG Selection Volume 6, so yet another bundled collection of old RPGs in Kemco. This includes Dragon Lapis, Lost Dragon, Alphadia Genesis, and As Divine Kamura are all in that collection. We don't get any of those over here, I don't think. And then Jinky Resurrection, Kinero Leverich is out as well, Empire of Sin. Yeah, busy week in Japan. Lots of releases. How about the UK, Dark Soccer?
A few things. On the 23rd, we have Persona 5 Strikers. We have Werewolf the Apocalypse, Earthblood. On the 25th, we have On the Road Truck Simulator, The Catch, Carp and Course. On the 26th, Veteranom. That's on Switch. Evoland, a Legendary Edition, Eternium X, Dex, Made of Scare, S-K-E-R, Bravely Default 2, Hellpoint, Theme Park Simulator, Baobab's Mausoleum, and Do Not Feed the Monkeys.
All right. Let's move on, and we will get a few more headlines for you guys before we get to the listener roundtable and the mailbag, of which I think we have one extremely short email tonight. We'll see, though. I'll have Dark Soccer check that out. All right. Meanwhile, Loki, what do you have for us?
So apparently the Grand Theft Auto 3 and Grand Theft Auto Vice City games have had their source code revealed, or should say reverse engineered. So there's been a team that's been working on that for quite a while, and they finally have taken care of that. With that, now they've been able to port the game to several different platforms, including the Nintendo Switch, also the Vita and Wii U. And so basically running those natively instead of via emulation. Also, it's been ported to the PC, and then they're working on getting ported to the PlayStation 2 and Xbox. Along with that, though, of course, in typical fashion, Take-Two has filed a DMCA takedown notice to GitHub to remove the reverse-engineered games. I thought reverse engineering was legal, but, you know, they did the same thing with Mario 64 as well. So, but it's already on the internet, so it's always on the internet. It'll never go away. It's too late.
That's pretty scary, though, that these games get their source code, like, reverse engineered. Like, what are they going to do next, you know?
I mean, I don't know. But it's interesting to see, you know, what they've been able to do with this. And I'm curious to see what kind of upgrades we're going to get with these, because I know with like Mario 64, people have added ray tracing into it and all sorts of craziness. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with this.
Yeah. All right. Well, one game that just doesn't stop getting updated is No Man's Sky. Of course, this is a game I've talked fondly about on this show before. It's a game I've really enjoyed, and you know, especially because they've really transformed it from what it was when it originally released. And now they've put out yet another update, and this update is all about companions. Now you can befriend the little alien creatures on the planets, like to a further, like before you could at least like feed them and even ride them around on the planet a little bit. Now you can go even further. So the alien creatures that you meet, you can actually turn them into companions that will join you, I believe, off the planet as well. So you don't just like screenshot them and then, you know, go to the next planet. You actually have them accompany you. You can train them to aid in exploration. You can have them find specific resources, provide light, find settlements, or even hunt some of the dangerous creatures. They can basically be your bitch in fighting some of the dangerous creatures on the planet. So it's a lot of stuff. So that just all came out for No Man's Sky. And like all the other updates, it's been free. Just another patch for the game. So yet more to explore. Another reason for me to start from scratch. Can't wait. All right. Moving on, Darsakra.
Well, Bungie got themselves in some hot water for Destiny 2 Beyond Light's Season of the Chosen. They had a phrase being used in it that actually goes back to a slogan used in Nazi Germany, which I'll go ahead and say what it is, blood and honor. And they thought it would work for that, you know, the game, and a lot of people were really, really put off by it. So, yeah, they apologized for it. They immediately did that and removed it from the game.
Serious question. Don't the orcs in Warcraft say something like that too? I thought they did. I could be wrong. And I think there was something that this was in tandem with in Destiny 2 where the optics were really not good. Like it was
It was on a completion banner.
Yeah, and there was something about like it had to do with something else called the cleansing where the optics of that was really, I mean, I'm sure they just made a horrible mistake, but that's just SG100 Matt says someone didn't do their homework when they came up with it. At least they fixed it and didn't try to be all like, well, it wasn't what, you know, was pointed out.
Anti-Semitism. I mean, whatever.
It was pointed out. It was fixed.
Yeah. So. No, I really don't think it was done on purpose, but I think that people still need to be better educated on history in general. So
that's a good point. If they didn't know anything about, or you know, they did this because they were ignorant to the situation, and education would have helped prevent that. True. True. Very true. All right. Let's move on. Just a couple more stories before we get to the roundtable. But first, a story from Loki.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think of this myself, but apparently there's a developer that's out there that tried to put out some games on Steam. One of these being Emoji Evolution. And they decided to name their company on Steam as Very Positive. So, you know, the developer name happens to appear right above the review scores. And so you may see Very Positive and think, oh, Very Positive Reviews. But no, that's not the case. It's just that's the name of the company is Very Positive. And Valve was not too keen about them trying to be tricky like that, and so they banned them off Steam.
Did they prove that it was to try? I'm kind of team Very Positive on this. Like, this is Valve's. Why is it so easy to just put a name there? That's kind of Valve's bad design. Like, I'm not sure I am totally with the whole, like, yeah, get them off of Steam. They exploited it. Maybe they wanted to name their company Very Positive Games. What's wrong with that? That's Steam's fault.
Yeah, and according to the developer, they said Valve's fully understands how minor this trick is. It's more important to have a famous brand name like Obsidian there. They didn't think that there was actually going to be an issue with naming it that, but they said that they had banned them due to review manipulations the reasoning. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just interesting.
Sia Tiberi in chat says, it's like how when my siblings were doing video reports for school, they ended with, this has been an A-plus production. Perfect.
And ironically, though, like, so very, it's very positive. You know, this emoji evolution game, you know, even though I was kind of dogging on it, has mostly positive reviews, which is kind of funny. But I don't know. Apparently they thought it was, you know, it got pointed out. So, you know, maybe they could change it to mostly positive games or something like that instead of just very positive as the name of the studio.
Seriously, very positive. I don't know. Anyway. All right. Well, something I'm not sure I'm meeting with positive thoughts is this news that Fortnite is now getting more characters, this time from Street Fighter. That's right. Favorites Ryu.
My heart's broken.
Favorites Ryu
skins
and Chun-Li are joining the Fortnite item shop so that you can dress your character like Chun-Li or Ryu. You know, since Chun-Li isn't going to be in Mortal Kombat and all, which, by the way, I'll just quickly say on that article, that website knew exactly what it was doing, and every time you share that article, you're buying into it. That's all I'm going to say. There's, and I'm not saying that makes it right. That's just some of the, like, garbage stuff that makes the internet so broken right now. But I must tell you, that website knows exactly what it was doing that story. That was not somebody. If you actually kind of go through and read the article, there's coded little gags in it where they actually talk about, it's the biggest street fighting championship, blah, 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 when they're talking about Mortal Kombat. Like, there's all sorts of code in it where they knew damn well what they were doing by getting gamers to rage retweet that. So stop and think about that a little bit next time you get it. And I'm not perfect with this. I have to remind myself. There's been articles I've retweeted that I probably shouldn't have. But I let things like this be a little bit of a lesson. Anyway, sorry, I had to do that quick aside because, of course, the talk of Chun-Li doesn't just bring to mind a great Nicki Minaj song, but it also brings to mind this article that was out there last week. Anyhow, Chun-Li in all her glory and Ryu will be coming to Fortnite. I mean, it's not the first time we've had gamer characters from other games in Fortnite. Kratos, of course, and Master Chief, both already in Fortnite when the PS5 got their version and the Xbox Series X got their version and so on. So,
and that's not all, right?
Did I miss something?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So you know what else is coming to Fortnite?
Oh,
and
no.
This might get your attention a little bit more.
Yeah, I heard. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Tron outfits.
Yeah. That was in last week's news. I thought I had mentioned it at some point, but yeah. Yeah, Tron is coming as well, and I just kind of let out this big sigh. I think the sigh that Dark Soccer just put out, I've kind of matched that with the Tron news.
Yeah.
All right, whatever. It's what the kids are into. You know what? I'm gonna just suck it up and take the high road. If it gets one more kid out there to want to watch the Tron movies, and I would say really the old one, but you know what? The new one's great too. The newer one is great too. The one from 2010, Tron Legacy. If it gets more kids to watch those movies, you know what? Okay. Okay. I'll accept it. So, all right. SG100 Matt says, apparently Peter Griffin is coming as well. What is that, for real?
No one cares.
That would be hilarious.
Fortnite is a very interesting pop culture blender at this point.
I would totally watch that.
I want Beavis and Butthead at this point. Why not put parody in parody? All right.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. That is it for the news that we have scheduled. How about the roundtable? I'd like to open it up to our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork for any questions that they might have. But also open it up to our email. Every week we invite your emails at participate@orangeloungeradio.com. And we'd like to read our favorites here on the air. How many do we have tonight, Dark Soccer?
One.
It's you can read it in one breath, but that's okay. I actually love the question, so let's get to it.
Well, it's one that's definitely going to send me on a journey.
I'm excited.
So, what is the best video game font? And this comes from D.
You forgot where D is from.
Waterloo.
I was defeated. Iowa. You won the war. Okay. I have to. I'm sorry.
I knew you were going
to
do that.
I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, but I'm sorry. All right. Okay, D. I actually legit love this question, though. And Dark Sakura, you are the one who, you know, went to school for this. So, of course, I'm going to start with you. What is the best video game font? Or, I'm sorry, what video game has the best font? I think was the question.
Well, see, this is still a loaded question because a lot of video games will use multiple typefaces. There's title faces. There's in-game dialogue faces. There's all kinds of things. Now, one of my favorite dialogue faces is called Humming. And it is the typeface that has been used in the Animal Crossing series.
Oh.
I think since Wild World, I want to say. And I actually have this font. I mean, it's a legit, you know, real typeface. And it's really beautiful to type with, really beautiful to lay out with. I really enjoy that one. Title font that they use is, it's very similar or maybe a modification of one called Think Heavy, F-I-N-K. Just has a lot of personality, but Think Heavy is a true type font. Still, they're charging for it. So, as far as other ones, like for titles, some of them are just like so fucking generic, you know? Like, I like the PlayStation font, but there are some games that will do like the movie thing and try to go with like Trajan, which is on like the cover of almost every, I'd say, movie from before 5 years ago, I would say. There's actually a video on YouTube called Trajan is the movie font. But I like when they go with something that isn't too generic. Like I like a Helvetica, but I like when they do something that's got a little bit more personality to it. You know, that's why I've always really liked the Humming font for Animal Crossing. I just always have thought it was a really enjoyable font to use.
So I was just going to say, you know, whenever you bring up fonts, somebody's going to make a joke. And Phoenix 7726, of course, says Comic Sans. But let me ask
this
question.
Yeah, that doesn't count. I ignored it on purpose.
Has any video game actually tried to use Comic Sans or Papyrus?
Not to my knowledge.
At least, well, I'm sure indie games have, but like published games, I don't think they have. Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Pixelpox says The Sims used Comic Sans.
And
that's
Undertale
right.
had a character named Sans and Papyrus. Okay?
Well, that's true.
But Capcom's font is ITC Corinna, K-O-R-I-N-N-A. I've always liked theirs. There's also Eurostyle, which is one that the Vogue font is based out of, was used in a few different games too. There's also the Mega Drive font that Sega used was Corporate IMG.
So
there's a few.
I was just saying because you're getting into where my answer to this question would go is like, I don't necessarily think of just one game, but there's something about, especially in the classic 8-bit era, there were a lot of games that shared fonts, usually from the same company. For example, you play Konami games back in the day, whether it was Simon's Quest, whether it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, whether it was Metal Gear, they all use like the same font. Capcom games all shared the same font in the 8-bit era, and I think Tecmo had a very unique font that was, you know, very representative of, like, you're playing a Tecmo game when you see this.
There's one in particular, though, that's been used by many games, both Japanese and English, called Cartoon 12.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoon 12 is a bitmap font that was designed by Steve Capps, his Apple programmer. First used in the Mac game Through the Looking Glass in 1984. It was never officially released. There were shareware versions of it, and then there was a version in DOS Deluxe Paint 2 by EA, where it was just called Comix, C-O-M-I-X. And it's been used in, actually it was used in Mortal Kombat. It was used in Puyo Puyo. I think Puyo Puyo Pocket. I'm just trying to think of a few other games. I mean, a bunch of games fucking used it. I'm trying to think of, yeah, actually, I think that the handheld versions of Samurai Shodown used it, I think. Some of the Disney games used it. The Qbert logo was done in Cooper Black, which Cooper's like the font that they would always use on like the back of like team jerseys, like, you know, the Famicom team jerseys. The Othello font was used for the Famicom Disk System. Trying to think what else. I mean, there's like a few like regular fonts that you'd see in a lot of stuff. Like Coleco used Optima for their where it said video game system. Optima is another one that I love using, but it's kind of an expensive one if you're just going to go flat out and buy it. Overwatch used Futura in some of their text on there, which is a font that I lay out stuff in all the time.
Obviously, again, Darkstar, I knew you would have a lot to say on this question because there's, you know, a lot of different, you know, you've kind of really studied a lot of this stuff. But I actually want to check in with Loki real quick on this question, see if you have an answer. But I want to ask a second part for you, Loki, because we're talking about all these, you know, companies that have used stuff. Well, now you get to speak from the perspective of game designer. And I'm curious, how did you choose the look for Pixel Poops number 2? And because obviously you do have things like in the interface, you know, in a certain font. How did you pick that? And so two-parter, do you have any, you know, again, for the emailer, do you have any favorite fonts yourself? But how did you pick what you would go with for Pixel Poops 2, Loki?
I just was looking at arcade fonts and I made something kind of similar to that. Mm-hmm. As far as, yeah, there wasn't really much choice because it's an 8x8 font. So you're kind of limited to what you can do with 8x8.
True.
I'd say my favorite one is probably, it's, I don't know what the actual font name's called, but it's Price Down. It's the Grand Theft Auto logo,
sure.
Or the Price is Right logo. So,
okay.
Yeah, that'd be my favorite.
It never really clicked for me that those two things use the same font, but you're right. The Price is Right and Grand Theft Auto are like in the same font. Huh.
Yeah.
It's funny. Okay, sorry, Dark Soccer, but I had to get that perspective too. But any other little information nuggets for our emailer?
I'm still a big fan of Karina, but that one also has a lot of history for it because the original type version was invented in 1904, and Capcom has been using it for some time. So.
Ooh. Ooh, I know what's iconic, and I don't know what the font is, but it's iconic, is the font that Activision used on all of their Atari 2600 games. Not the games themselves, but the box art. The box art all had the title in this very bold font. The cartridge labels were all in the same font, and like in a very, like, it was like always like white text on a very colorful background. So if you had them all like stacked up on a shelves, like, you knew these are the Activision games because they all look similar. I mean, the Atari games had a font too, but they didn't look as good because they always put like dark on dark. But the Activision stuff really stood out.
There was a custom font, but it was modified from another one, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was.
That's okay. We've given this emailer like way so much information, but I'd like it. I knew it would spark this kind of discussion, and like, I'm like, dang, that is a question no one's asked in 857 episodes. Good job. Like, that's a really good question.
Oh yeah, but no, that was a pretty classic one. Gosh, I wish I could. I know people have done versions of it.
Yeah.
Probably at DaFont or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
All right, well, thank you.
Okay, so for the record, there, I just found a page called the Game Font Database.
Uh-huh.
And it's got apparently a lot of fonts used by different companies.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I'll link it in the chat.
Nice. All right, well, thanks for the email. And if you can think of a good question we haven't been asked in 857 episodes, or you know what? It's fine if you ask one that we got asked 100 episodes ago. We probably won't remember. Send us an email, participate@orangeloungeradio.com. And Phoenix7726 says, Dark Soccer is a fountain of knowledge. Ba-dum-bum.
You know what?
What?
I'm a typography nerd.
It's funny.
I like big fonts, and I cannot lie.
All right. But an ultralight's okay too. All right. SSG100 Matt says, how do you type with boxing gloves on your hands? Very difficult. Very difficultly. You don't. Or you, with a very big keyboard.
It's a strong bad thing.
Oh.
It was a strong bad thing.
Totally missed the reference.
Yeah.
All right. I think that is probably about it for, I mean, we know we don't have any other emails, and outside of that question that was just a strong bad joke in disguise, I didn't see any others pop up in chat. You have a couple other minutes, though, if you have something you want to get out there, because I will ask Loki if there, or, and Darksakura, if there's any other last-minute stories they want to get into for tonight.
Not me.
Sure. So, apparently, like a phoenix rising from the ashes... Soulja Boy has posted yet another game console concept on his Instagram. I can only assume it's another Chinese clone console because it looks like a Chinese clone console. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see until someone recognizes it. But he claims it's a building a brand new console from scratch, all new design, all new games, all new deals. Let's make history.
Girl,
right, like
stop.
All the other ones.
Girl, stop. That's all I have to say
it's
about
not
that.
Ever happen.
Girl, stop.
So, yay! Something to look forward to.
Bobby Blackwolf is bringing up in chat. By the way, did y'all cover that Intellivision Amico got delayed from April to October? It probably didn't hit any news sites. Now, from I got the email because I pre-ordered, bought, prepaid, whatever. One of those. Now from April 3rd. 2021 or 4321 to 10/10/21. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. You're right. It didn't make the show roll because honestly they just delayed it, and that YouTube they put out was a lot. they didn't really show any games. I still think there's a market for the Amico, and I think there's a lot of people dunking on it that probably don't need to be. And I think there could be some really good stuff that I think a lot of, and I've told Aaron he should look into, or YYR, he should look into developing for Amico. I don't know if anything ever came of that, but, and I don't know how kindly they would take to Pixel Poops, but obviously he's made other games like Super Multitasking and that stuff that would be great for it. But that aside, I mean, and I would encourage not just, you know, YYR, but maybe other indie developers who are having a problem, maybe getting noticed on the Steam marketplace, you know, say what you will about Amico and Intellivision, but you know, having a personality like Tommy Tallarico behind it knows how to kind of talk up and hype up the product. So it could be a chance to, you know, get things seen. Obviously the delay is disappointing, but I also kind of start to wonder, because we've been seeing a lot of the same games and the footage for those. I almost wonder if they had released 10/10/20, would they have had the games coming out to really carry them through the next year? Maybe this is going to better position themselves. But I know, especially for being such a small company, the pandemic's probably hit them pretty hard in the development. And of course, you know, obviously they're having problems making PlayStation 5s and Series X's with all these chips. Obviously, you know, it's not all the same chips, obviously, but they're going to have problems supply when it comes to the Amico. So like, I get the delay from that perspective. I'm not an angry customer or anything. The pandemic has fucked everything and everyone. Like, it's just, you know, things are going to get delayed. I just hope it positions Intellivision for longer success and the long game and a stream of newer games that come out, because without it, that thing is going to, you know, it's not going to do well if they don't continuously have new games to put out there and talk about in the news and all that stuff. So, all right. Anyway, Bobby does say they've been showing new games every week on their YouTube channel. The only ones I've seen that ended up catching my eye, Breakout, I've seen like three different times now. And then there was that platformer game that was a revival of an old title where the whole trick was you flipped it from night to day and stuff. I can't remember the name, but it looked cute, but it did look like a mobile phone game on your TV a little bit, but I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. I know that sounds very sacrilegious, but one game we all never shut up about is Pokemon Go. That's a mobile phone game. Now, I wouldn't want to play that on my TV, but they make decent games.
Yeah, it's an AR game.
Decent games for the phone. Like that Sayonara Wild Hearts was started as a phone game and ended up on Switch and all this other stuff, so... We'll see. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Loki.
No, I was gonna say it's all about the art style. Like, I don't know, the motion graphics stuff that they kind of do nowadays, you know, with kind of tweaking sprites. To, like, I know the style. That it looks, it's very much like a mobile game, especially when you're talking about advertisements and stuff. It's all about the really the gameplay, though, on those. And I haven't really seen a whole lot yet to get me super excited about the new console. But, yeah, I'd be curious to see how to develop for it. But I don't know when that ever would happen, if it would ever happen.
All right. Well, note the date and time. Loki said he's curious about developing for Amico. All right. Anyhow, any other last-minute stories?
No, that's it.
All right. Then I think it is about time we end the show, but not before I thank all of you for tuning in tonight. Thank you for tuning in to Orange Lounge Radio, whether you were here live at twitch.tv/VogNetwork or you were listening on our podcast feed. We appreciate you guys being here with us every week. You don't have to give us money for, but if you want to, via bits and subs or shopping in our shop over at vognetwork.com/shop and buying some merch, we're not going to say no to that. We'd appreciate it. But all we really want is tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here to put out on air, then what can we do? Speaking of shopping, kind of, I should give a shout out here for on the Twitch channel. When there's a stream going on, you can actually donate the VOG points or the points on Twitch. You can actually donate right now to Bobby is trying to put on a VHS gaming tape stream. So he found like a bunch of old tapes from the 90s. And if we can get 100,000 points raised, which is not as hard as you think, he's going to put those and air some of the content from like old E3s and stuff. We're already up to 74K, so we're looking good.
How do you do that?
If you click on the little icon that has the points, it looks like a little bubble, I guess, next to the number of points you have.
Got it.
You click on it, and then like the very first option will say the gaming tape stream, 23 days left, and then you can donate however many points you want, a maximum of 200 points. So, you figured it out. You figured it out, Loki. Now we're at 76,000. There you go. So, all right. So hopefully look forward to that stream soon. So, and we're trying to come up with other ways that you guys can spend your points. So stay tuned for all that good stuff as well. So, all right. Let's go around and get everybody's final thoughts, and I will go to Dark Sakura for your final thought first.
I am in one of those moods where I want to watch Midsommar again and drink. That movie is great.
Go ahead, Loki. I'll have you go next.
My final thought is I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. So I have a few ideas, but I may actually just go back to working on Pixel Poops number 2 and to get ready for the console version or the cartridge version of that.
All right. And my final thought, my mom's 80th birthday would have been this upcoming Tuesday. So obviously she's on my mind a lot this last week and honest, not just this last week, but always, especially ever since she passed. Just wanted to acknowledge that and just dedicate the work that I'm doing here on OLR tonight and pretty much every night to her memory. So that's it. I hope that doesn't end it on a downer, though. It's not a downer. I'm actually trying to look at that as a very positive thing. So I hope you guys all have an amazing week and play a lot of games and have a lot of fun online. And don't go crazy, though, okay? Because those are real people that you're playing against. And we'll see you in 7 days to talk when it will be March again, but for real this time. And we can talk all about... Oh, no, I'm sorry. Actually, I'm sorry. We have one more show because it'll be the 28th. So in 2 weeks, we'd be in March. So next week, we'll still be in February. And we can think about how March is coming so quickly again. But this time in 2021. Have a wonderful week, everybody. We'll see you in 7 days. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.